Good morning, everyone. My name is Katie Hawkins. I am the chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission. I call to order today, May 8, 2025, the commission meeting. The meeting is being held at the Hilton Gardens in South Natomas in Sacramento, California, as well as virtually on Zoom. Constituents who cannot be here in person can participate on Zoom. Instructions on how to participate virtually will be provided shortly. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is live webcast and can be viewed at www.cal-span.org. The archive videos will also be available at the cal-span.org website. Before we get started today with today's agenda, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, wonderful. Before we do roll call today, I'd like to welcome our newest commissioner, Hampus Itisadder from Thousand Oaks, California. Welcome. I'll give a brief bio here. Mr. Itisadder is an investment manager at Suntex Marina Investors since 2022. Before that, he was a finance and business development director at Hammer, Jewell & Associate, vice president at Eight Roads, investment manager at Fosun International, and an analyst at Morgan Stanley. He is a member of the Marine Recreation Association and Toastmasters International and earned his Master's of Arts degree at the Economics from the University of Oxford. Welcome, and just wanted to give you space if you would like to say a few words to the group here.
Sure, thank you for that, Chair Hawkins. And I'd like to first of all direct a special thanks to the staff at the Division of Boating and Waterways for helping onboard me so quickly. It's great to be able to join this meeting. And I'd also like to thank my fellow commissioners for integrating me into this group. I thought we had some very interesting tours yesterday, and I look forward to working with you for the benefit of our great state. I obviously come from a background of owning and operating marinas, including 17 marinas here in the state of California. So I'd like to contribute that expertise to the commission.
Excellent. Well, we welcome you and excited to work with you. So thank you. Okay, thank you. And next, I'd like to ask the clerk to take roll call for the commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be taking roll call. First of all, Katie Hawkins, Chair from Truckee, California.
Present.
Tom Peer, Vice Chair of San Francisco, California. Absent. Jose Gonzalez from Sacramento, California.
Present.
Hi, Jose. And since you're attending virtually, there are two questions I need to ask. First question, is there anyone in the room with you who is over 18?
No.
Thank you. I just want to remind you that the camera must be on you at all times unless the video affects the quality of the internet connection.
Confirm.
Thank you. Maggie Hallahan from San Francisco, California.
Present.
Hampus Itisadder from Thousand Oaks, California.
Present.
Thank you. Gonzalo Medina from Long Beach, California.
Present.
And Maricela Rosales from Crestline.
Present.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we have six in attendance. We have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Now, we're moving on to agenda item two. Will the clerk now read the instructions regarding public comment on the agenda and non-agenda items?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will now provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. First, I will cover the in-person meeting protocol. In order to provide comments on agenda items in person, members of the public are requested to fill out the green public comment card. In order to provide comments on non-agenda items in person, members of the public are requested to fill out the blue comment card that are located in the back of the room. Both public comment cards must be completed and turned in to me. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. Now I will cover the procedures on using Zoom. If you wish to make a verbal comment on one of the agenda items, or if you want to make a comment during the items not on the agenda, you must use the Zoom webinar app or call in by phone. The commission will hear public comments from in-person attendees first, and then the public comments from attendees on Zoom. If you're currently watching the webcast on calspan.org, but you want to make public comments, please register for the Zoom webinar to receive your unique ID and password or a phone number if you wish to call. Information can be found on the notice agenda or dbw.parks.ca.gov. To make public comments on agenda items, please virtually raise your hand at the beginning of the presentation to let us know you wish to speak. To do this, if you're using a computer or laptop or tablet, use the raise hand button in the Zoom webinar app. If you're calling by phone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand. And if you're calling in by phone, dial *6 to unmute your device. When the public comment period starts, the order of commentators will be determined by the registration list and then who raises their hand first. I will call each commenter by name and then unmute your device. For members of the public that call in, you will be identified by the last 3 digits of your phone number. Please note, if you appear by video when you make your comments. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text the area code 805-801-3676 or email to it@agpvideo.com, so an IT person can assist you. Thank you.
Thank you, Karina. At this time, I'd like to introduce any local dignitaries. However, I don't see any, so we'll just move on. And I would like to introduce State Park staff and staff from the Division of Boating and Waterways. First, I want to welcome Director Armando Quintero from California State Parks and Recreation. We have Ramona Fernandez, Deputy Director of Division of Boating and Waterways, Catherine Tobias, Senior Legal Counsel from the California State Parks and Recreation, and I think that is it from the state. So welcome all. Before I go into my chair report, I did want to give some space to the director just to welcome everyone. Sorry to put you on the spot, but we would like to hear from you. No, please do that now.
Okay, this will be a couple of minutes. Thank you.
Please.
Good morning, everybody, commissioners, staff, and members of the public, both in person and those who are joining us online. It's really a pleasure to be with you today. And I also want to make sure that I acknowledge the two teams that make this meeting possible, certainly the Boating and Waterways team that did a lot of the background work in preparing materials, and AGP. They're making our communications and recording of these meetings possible, as well as all of our hybrid abilities functional. And I also want to mention that Liz McGirt, Chief Deputy of State Parks, is joining us virtually. Actually, she got ill this week, but there you are. hi, Liz. It's good to see you. and so I just want to acknowledge that Liz is in the room as well. And also, I need to let you all know that I need to leave a little early today because I have meetings in Monterey this afternoon and Santa Cruz all day tomorrow. But it's a pleasure to be with you. first, I'd like to welcome our three new commissioners, Maricela Rosales from Crestline and Gonzalo Medina from Long Beach. And they were just appointed to the commission in January. And Hampus Idester, who was appointed in April. And it's really a pleasure to have spent time with you yesterday on the tour and getting to know each of you a bit. And it's great that you bring your knowledge to this commission and to the public. It's really a pleasure to join the commission yesterday, as I was just mentioning. And I wanted to thank the partners from Marin County, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, and the City of Stockton. They all hosted us at their facilities yesterday, and it was really great to see the value of the grants, which are managed by Boating and Waterways, and what those grants do for communities and boaters across California. And I will mention for the commissioners and for also members of the public, I'm always stunned when I find new projects that were actually made possible by boating and waterways. There are some water education facilities in the state that are truly impressive. There's one up near Folsom. Is that where it is? There's a water education facility near Folsom. If you ever get the time to swing by there, imagine a professional sports stadium, but for water. That's what Boating and Waterways funded up there. It's amazing. And then also throughout the state, I will stop sometimes when I see boat ramps in remote areas, like on the Tuolumne River outside of, you know, outside of town there. And the Boating and Waterways Commission and Division does all kinds of work and for all types of access across California and also for the safety of boaters across California. As we saw yesterday at Lake Berryessa, the threats to native habitats, infrastructure, and the ability of Californians to continue to recreate really are challenged with the introduction of the golden mussel in California's waterways. An incredible threat to the water systems of the state, not only for the health of native species in the bodies of water and reservoirs and lakes and streams, but also golden mussel getting into the water infrastructure that provides water for our communities and for agriculture are threatened by this introduced species. They can literally clog significant water lines. And so the state across California, we're taking dramatic and critical actions to prevent the spread of golden mussel. It really represents a major threat. While the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is the lead agency in the research and development of these best practices for appropriate measures to keep the mussels from spreading to other vital waterways, State Parks is adapting its processes as fast as possible to keep its waterways open to boating, recreation, and safe from the threats posed by invasive species. It was sort of heartbreaking yesterday to be out at Lake Berryessa and find out that because of this threat and because we're not really, we all don't have the ability to treat this threat so we don't contaminate these bodies of water, for many boaters, Lake Berryessa is not accessible. So it's really a serious impact. At Folsom Lake State Recreation Area, the Gold Fields District staff and partner shops have already inspected more than 5,000 vessels since implementing a new vessel inspection and quarantine program, which began on April 14th at the request of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. And, of course, the goal is to prevent damage to vessels, the ecosystem of the lake, and, as I mentioned, the infrastructure of water delivery systems for all Californians, including agriculture. On a more positive note, as we announced just a few weeks ago, Lower Trestles, which is part of the San Onofre State Beach, which is part of the Marine Base Camp Pendleton, will be the site for the surfing competition for the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles. So we're honored to be able to share this gem of California, of California State Park System, with the world. Really, the Olympics are coming to the state parks, which is amazing. That iconic beach has inspired generations of surfers who will now welcome the world's best athletes and show millions of what's possible when not only public lands are preserved and shared with the world, but I do think that it is what will also be reflected as a partnership between the U.S. Marines and state government in providing public access. Also last week, State Parks celebrated the 22nd Annual Director's Recognition Awards with an in-person ceremony at the California Natural Resources Agency building in Sacramento. Nearly 200 State Park staff, partners, family members, and friends gathered to honor the incredible accomplishments of colleagues across the department. Several of those awards, by the way, went to State Park lifeguards. And one of the things that I was talking about yesterday with some of our commissioners is we have State Parks has the largest largest lifeguard workforce in California. And the number of public contacts and rescues that occur on any given day in the 380 miles of coastline that are managed by State Parks is truly astonishing. And the real news is the news you don't hear about. You know, the people who are contacted, where injury or death are prevented, as well as some of the rescues that are as dramatic as you could be, as dramatic as I would say, even beyond imagination. When we had the award ceremony, You know, there was video of some of these rescues that occurred, and in Santa Cruz, where just a few months ago a major storm knocked the end of a pier off with a building, and the waves were huge, and people were in the water. In fact, there was one individual who died because he got trapped under some debris that was blown in by the waves and the winds. We had lifeguards out there on jet skis, and literally when they were navigating their jet skis through debris, the waves were so high that when they would drop down sort of in the valley between waves, they were unable to see the lighthouses on the coast because the waves were so high. And they were doing that with debris floating around and rescuing people out of the water. Really, and I know that there's a video about the director's award, but it is, it's actually a very emotional experience because the work done by those folks who are heroic in their physical acts, as well as the genius that I have seen across the department in various departments, is really impressive. And like I was just saying, I think the ceremony showcased the depth, diversity, and the impact of the work that's happening every day across state parks. And it's really something that I think we can all be proud of. Also want to recognize the 25th anniversary of the amazing Dock Walker program, which is funded by Boating and Waterways, and that anniversary occurred in March. California has one of the highest levels of recreational boating activity in the nation, with approximately 4 million boaters. I'm going to guess there's a bunch of boaters in the room. I know I'm one. And even a small amount of pollution per vessel can cause serious harm to waterways and marine life. Since 2000, more than 1,300 dock walkers have shared clean boating practices with face-to-face interactions with over 130,000 boaters across the state. Dock walkers help raise awareness about important boating practices related to curbing pollutants such as oil, fuel, sewage, trash, and marine debris through the distribution of educational materials such as the California Boater Kits. And they do this at marinas and boat launch ramps and boating events or anywhere where there are boaters. The success of this program is made possible through the partnerships with organizations like the Bay Foundation, which is a division of the Boating and Waterways Clean Vessel Act program grantee, the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, the U.S. Power Squadrons, Save Our Shores, Lake Berryessa Watershed Partnership, California Conservation Corps, and numerous marinas and yacht harbors across the state. I'd also like to mention that June 11th to 15th, sorry guys, I'm going on, there's a lot of info, but from June 11th to 15th, we're going to be celebrating the fourth annual California State Parks Week, hosted by California State Parks, California State Parks Foundation, Parks California, and Save the Redwoods League. This week-long celebrations offers more than 170 events, and every year the number of events have increased. And what I also love about this is that not only do the number of events during that week increase, but there's new activities that are born and continue to be delivered through the year at state parks. And some of these experiences are also virtual, so you don't have to travel across the state to go hang out in the giant sequoias or literally go underwater at Point Lobos, where there will be divers providing live video feeds about underwater exploration around Point Lobos. There's 280 state parks, so there's a lot to do during that week if you're interested. Events taking place on or near the water include a birding by boat event at Folsom Lake State Recreation Area, a coastal walk at Carmel River State Beach, and a kayak event at the Oxbow Pond at the newest state park, which is Dos Rios. Dos Rios, by the way, sits only 15 minutes from the western edge of Modesto. And one of the beauties of this new 2,500-acre park is just across the San Joaquin River from the park is a National Wildlife Refuge. So I know many of you are probably familiar with Modesto. You've seen the buildings and the all the ag infrastructure as you drive by. But seriously, just a 10-minute drive to the west from Modesto, you find yourself in this park. And in the winter, there are millions of water birds in the air, and it feels like you're in some exotic place like some wildlife reserve in Africa. And it's right there, and it's in the heart of California. So commissioners, as you meet today, you're going to consider three projects for funding from the Waterways Connections Initiative. This was a one-time state budget allocation of $154 million, which we received from the general, from the state's general fund in fiscal year 21 and 22. And it was the WCI is what we call that. It was actually the funding that we got from that that allowed us to create Dos Rios and also continue our work in exploring new waterway connection initiatives in the Central Valley of California, which is a really a park poor area that really needs more access to this kinds of things that we all enjoy. $10 million of this allocation was provided to the Division in Boating Waterways for local assistance boat launching facilities, which will improve access to waterways for low or no cost recreational boaters. We're looking forward to the public hearing about these projects and how this funding will be utilized, and will help create connections to the waterways of California. And I just want to say thank you to your commitment for the important work of your commission and the staff and the programs of the Division of Boating and Waterways and the mission of California State Parks. And one of the things that I love to think about, and it's a tagline that we're using with Parks Week, is I really want more Californians, when they think about a state park, whether they're at a state park or even at home, that when they think about state parks, the phrase that comes to mind is, I live here. And I think it's really something that is as important as anything now with everything that's going on in the world, that knowing that we live in this beautiful place hopefully will bring, you know, some peace of mind and also experiences that will keep us physically healthy. So, again, thank you so much for what you all do. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Director Quintero. That was more than 2 minutes, but I appreciate it.
You can do it. You need a cane.
No. But that's thank you for your remarks, your thoughtful remarks. We really appreciate it. Okay. We're going to move on in the agenda with the chair report, but for my new fellow commissioners, I'd love to hear from all of you first and then wrap it up. Not to put anyone on the spot, but I'm actually going to look here to Commissioner Gonzalo Medina.
Good morning, everyone, and good fellow commissioners, director. I don't have a lot to say, but I do want to just the director referenced the lifeguards and the work that they do up and down the state. And I just want to echo those sentiments that they truly are the best ambassadors for California and our great tourist industry. They are sometimes are the ones that make the first contact with visitors from all parts of the world. And my experience with the state lifeguards is they're professional and they represent California very well. So thank
Mr.
you for
Medina is a lifeguard, by the way.
So, slightly biased, but your team is extremely.
No, but I mean, what I mean by that is, you know.
Thank you for those words.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to look to Commissioner Rosales for her update.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, commissioners. Happy to be here. Still very young in the division and in the commission, but I do want to share that I've really been thinking about the mussel invasive species that's impacting our waterways here in California, and just trying to find ways to work with the division to bring more awareness, bring more partners in here in the conservation movement across California. They may have the resources, connections, and support to be able to create a larger awareness and education approach to this, because of the nature of these mussels and the gravity of the impact to our water system infrastructure as a whole in California. So thinking about how we meet the moment is something that is going to be a priority of mine this year and moving forward. It does also impact waterways across the West. And we are hearing from other elected officials and other folks in conservation that this is also happening in their states. So this is something that we can look at more holistically, work with partners across the West for this. And then also, as a stand-up paddleboarder, I'm also interested in looking at how we create more excitement around recreational boaters, inform them about the values of the division, and also the opportunities of our waterways provide for them. So that is my update. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Commissioner Rosales. It looks like we have Commissioner or Vice Chair Pierre that is joining us. And Clerk, can you run us through that process, please?
Sure. Good morning, Commissioner Pierre. I had initially marked you as absent, but I will change that to you being virtually present. And also, I would just like to ask you, as protocol, two questions. Is there anyone in the room with you that is over 18 years? You're on mute, sir.
No, there is not.
Thank you. Just a reminder that the camera must be on you at all times unless the video affects the quality of the internet connection. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. I'd also like to welcome our newest commissioner, Commissioner Itzetter, on his report.
Thank you for that. Having been a commissioner for just a couple of days, I don't have a lengthy report, but I did want to just share with you that I have been really encouraged to see in Southern California, where I am based, how the boating communities are responding to the effects of the LA fires, which have, of course, been devastating in some cases. And we're seeing people work very hard in the marina industry and the wider boating communities to make sure that all of these boaters are accommodated, that their needs are taken care of. That work is still ongoing. So that is another key priority in addition to golden mussels and all these other key issues that I think Commissioner Rosales outlined very well.
Excellent. Thank you. Looking over here at Commissioner Hallahan, would you like to give your report?
Yes, thanks, Chair and Commissioners and everybody who's here. Good morning. just taking off from our last meeting where we had a lot of discussions with law enforcement and the process of using the California Navigational Code into all the different counties and how the DA, you know, works with that. It seems bureaucracy, but it's really important that our law enforcement's tickets stick so that people do the right thing. Anyway, I went down and visited our San Francisco Maritime Unit, which has really grown over the last few years. They get a lot of money from federal because they're also part of the larger security because we're in San Francisco and it's right there at the Golden Gate Bridge, so it's national security as well. Their response was that they had written many tickets in 2024, but because the tickets go under miscellaneous in San Francisco, there's not an actual number to take the non-boater card driver or non-registration. There was no way for them to have the ticket stick, and it would get dismissed. So we heard that last meeting, and I confirmed it in our local police department, maritime police. So anyway, I just really appreciate all of the security we get as recreational boaters on the water to keep them safe and help drill into people about boat safety. and to pay their dues for the California waterways that they get to enjoy. So I just wanted to thank all the law enforcement and security that we get on the water. And thank you to this commission for paying for such great education, because I hear so much good things through the law enforcement departments about the ongoing education that you have given them and funding. So thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you. I'll look virtually to Commissioner Gonzalez for his report.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. Just the appreciation again for the site visit, and I think the opportunity like yesterday to see how federal partners, county partners, municipal partners are all kind of part of the work. So I know we'll get into that in a couple of the presentations, and I look forward to hearing more from our brand new commissioners.
Excellent. And while we're virtual, we'll ask Commissioner Pierre for his report.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to meet the new commissioners, virtually at least. I'm very sorry that I'm not able to be there. I had my final this morning, which is why I'm late, and I apologize for that again. as part of my Admiralty and Maritime law degree or advanced law degree. But to the greater points, I had the distinct pleasure of undertaking a tour of the Mississippi Delta. And I raise this as part of activities in the community because there's a lot of takeaways from what's happened in the Mississippi Delta, which could very readily apply to what's happening in the state of California. And that primarily is erosion-related issues that are by and large man-created. And it was quite striking to be out on the water and to have the guide explain to me just what it looked like even as little as 40 years ago. And basically the Delta, Mississippi Delta, has melted for a variety of reasons that I won't get into. But I think sort of my prime takeaway from that was just the many, many interests involved, environmental community, legal community, Army Corps of Engineers, private actors who are trying to address this issue in terms of beach restoration and whatnot. And for some of the newer commissioners, you may not be aware, but the sort of mission of beach restoration falls within the umbrella of what the division is responsible for. And so I'm happy to share those key takeaways with all of you individually or collectively whenever you have time. But that was a great experience. And just item number two, as part of my work here at Tulane, I completed a rather lengthy paper on coastal access in the state of California, both from a historical and a legal and a practical perspective. So if anyone has insomnia some night, you can just give me a call and I'll be happy to send you a copy, and that should, you know, it's probably better than melatonin. But it's some pretty fascinating stuff involving state lands, the Coastal Commission, obviously, legislative, constitutional issues involved, and of course, a lot of private parties like Martin's Beach and the Hollister Ranch, who have denied access to the public, which they're legally required to do. So that's my report. Thanks, guys.
Excellent. Thank you. So I'll just kind of round it out because we have a quorum. We have a full commission, which is very exciting for, I would say, just for, I think, for staff and for myself. It's, and so just want to thank again the governor's office for working diligently to have us all here. It's really exciting. I will acknowledge, though, it has been a rough start for us this year, and I think our hearts are still with the folks in LA and the recovery efforts that are going on there at state parks, but just those communities. But one of the things that has, I think, inspired us as a commission is to see all the efforts from the state parks and the leadership in Sacramento to help rebuild and navigate some really challenging and complexities that are happening right now. But knowing the joy that folks have being in the outdoors and providing those opportunities to ensure that California's outdoors are safe and welcoming, especially those that desperately need it right now. So again, internal grateful from me and I think my fellow commissioners on that. I think from the field tours yesterday, we really understand what partnership is and being creative. With the transition of the new administration, we are seeing the impacts that it has within these local communities. But again, it underscores the importance of what the staff here is doing, the grassroots and cross-jurisdiction collaboration that is happening throughout the state to make sure, again, that we're serving the mission of state parks and the division by ensuring that folks feel safe and welcoming. We're going to see that because it is the season where we see high visitation. And so, again, I think the open communications that have been happening, the collaboration, and just moving through this challenging time together, but just knowing that at the center of it is there's a lot of joy that's happening right now with people being able to connect to California's landscapes. And I feel like all of us have those stories as well. So, with that, I kind of skipped ahead because I was going to give the director an opportunity because he has to go to Monterey. So we're going to move on And I'm going to tee up Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If AGB can put up, yes, thank you, sirs. Super excited that we finally have a full commission, and I couldn't have said it better, Chair Hawkins, on, you know, acknowledging the governor's office to get us this full commission and with great resources here. So I'm very excited to work with all of you. We had a long day yesterday on touring, so I appreciate all of you patience as we worked through trying to get this WCI funding encumbered this fiscal year. Next slide, please. So last commission, I briefed you all on our efforts for changing regulations in line with federal law. So our next steps have been, we've submitted our regulation package and the final life jacket type code rulemaking package was submitted on May 5th to our Office of Administrative Law, which we call OAL. We love acronyms here, right? So Office of Administrative Law has 30 days to review. Our next package that we'll be submitting is fire extinguisher regulations, and that is currently under review and will be submitted to OAL soon. Next slide, please. I wanted to also update you. I know everyone has heard, you know, what's going on at the federal administration and federal funds availability here in California. And as you recall, we have three funding sources that come from the federal government. Our first one is Recreational Boating Safety Grant, which is administered through the U.S. Coast Guard. The second is the Clean Vessel Act and boating infrastructure grants, which are both administered through U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we continue to receive those funds. With the RBS, which we call Recreational Boating Safety Grants, and those are, since they are administered through the U.S. Coast Guard, that falls under the Department of Homeland Security. So recently, when we got our new allocation, there came new terms and conditions aligned with that. So we are working with our legal office to review those to ensure that they are aligned with us being able to meet those terms and conditions. So I will continue to update you all on that at our next commission meeting. And next slide, please. And again, the big buzz here is golden mussel, right? Our newest invasive mussel that was discovered in the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta. I think I briefed you all in November. Was just discovered in October of 2024, native to China, likely arrived in a ballast water on an international vessel. Again, this is the first time that this mussel has been encountered here in the United States. So all the Western states, as Commissioner Rosales had mentioned in her associations, are mobilizing to their response to this new invader. It is a non-native species, and like the quagga and zebra mussels, they also pose that same threat as the quagga and zebra mussels, since they too can damage, as you heard from Director Quintero, about native ecosystems, damage infrastructures, and ruin recreational opportunities. But this new threat is more dire than the gold. It has a more dire threat. They have a wider environmental tolerance, leaving more water bodies in California and at risk, unlike the quagga and zebra mussel. So efforts made by the state, there was an interagency press release about a response framework daylighted on April 16th. This can be found on the internet. You can find all of these on our website as well. There was also, DBW also maintains, to our best of our ability, a contact list of the water craft inspection programs and closures that can be found on dbw.parks.ca.gov/inspections. And as Director Quintero mentioned, the efforts being done here, you know, within state parks at Folsom Lake as well as Lake Clementine. So again, this is really a moving target, as it's fluid. We'll continue to update you all, and we serve at the division as a resource to our park operations side of the department, since we do manage and work close with the Department of Fish and Wildlife Services, or DFW, which is, as the director mentioned, the lead agency. And as you all know, we have a quagga and zebra mussel grant prevention program also in place. So more to come on that. And next slide, please. This also just identifies more of what those mussels can do and look like. Next slide, please. That completes my report, Madam Chair. And I welcome questions.
Thank you, Deputy Director Fernandez. At this time, do we have any public comments for this agenda item?
Madam Chair, we do not.
Okay. Do we have any questions for my fellow commissioners at this time? No? Excellent. Okay. Next, let's move on to
Judy, I'm sorry. I did raise my hand there, but maybe you didn't see it. And just a very brief question. Ramona, they're an exclusively freshwater species. Am I correct? And that's my understanding.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay. So probably the best plan is really just to be vigilant about, you know, people getting from the delta up to the lakes and so forth. But that's just my anticipation of the way this whole thing is going to play out. Yeah.
Yes. As you can imagine, the delta is pretty difficult to, close. But yes, those reservoirs and lakes that do have those opportunities to close, quarantine, and do the best that they can, yes, to prevent the spread of those mussels.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. If there's no further questions for Deputy Director Fernandez, we'll move on to the next agenda item. We have a legislative report, agenda item 7. Maribel, hi.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. It's good to be with you all today. My name is Maribel Barajas, and I'm the Legislative Deputy for State Parks. This report provides a summary and the status of legislation. Although these bills don't directly affect the division, I believe this would be of interest to the commission and the public. Information contained in this report is as accurate as of April 21st, 2025. Next slide. AB 274 by Assemblymember Ransom is related to abandoned and derelict vessels. This bill would require the State Lands Commission on or before January 1st, 2027, and contingent upon an appropriation to create an inventory of all abandoned and derelict commercial and recreational vessels in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, including commercially navigable waters as specified. The bill would also require the inventory to be broken down by county, vessel type, and vessel size. This bill is currently in the Assembly Appropriations Committee. Next bill. SB 561. This is related to Hazardous Waste Emergency Distress Flare Safe Disposal Act. This bill would enact the Emergency Distress Flare Safe Disposable Act to provide for the safe and proper management of pyrotechnic marine flares. This bill would require the Department of Toxic and Substance Control to develop regulations on or before January 1st, 2027 for implementation of this act. This bill is also currently in the Senate Appropriations Committee. That finalizes the legislative report, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, sorry, just make sure. All right, I want to see, Clerk, do we have any public comments at this time?
We do not have any public comments, Madam Chair.
Okay. Do any of my fellow commissioners have any questions for the legislative update? Okay. None at this time. We will just move ahead then. Okay. All right. So thank you, Maribel, for that. And we'll move on to public comments for items not on the agenda. At this time, we will hear public comments on items not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comment. Are there any blue comment cards or any raised hands on Zoom?
Madam Chair, there are no blue comment cards, and I do not see any raised hands.
Okay, excellent. Okay, if there are no public comments, I am formally closing public comments for this item, not for items not on the agenda. Okay, with that, we are at the point of the agenda where we do have a break for 10 minutes. And I say let's go ahead and take that break because we do have a long day. So it's 9:47. So let's reconvene here just around 9:57, and we'll make sure we're on time. So see you soon. 10 minutes, please. All right, welcome back, everyone. Thank you. We will now resume the meeting with advice and comment on our proposed projects. And so I would like to invite Mr. Caldwell, who will provide a presentation, item agenda number 9. Casey, I believe you're on mute. We can't hear you. Are we able to bring Casey up? No. Okay. Let's give it one moment, and then we might pivot to the next and come back to Casey's presentation. Okay. We'll work on this. Am I getting the nod? Okay, great. So Casey, we'll come back, and next up we'll hear from Mr. Mathias on the Campbell Cove Boat Launch Facility Grant.
Good morning, Madam Chair Hawkins, Commissioners, and other attendees. I'm John Mathias with DBW, and I'm here to present the Bureau of Reclamation's request for a $250,000 planning contract to develop plans for improvements to the Capella Cove launching facility on Lake Berryessa. Representing the Bureau is Mark Vargas, who's the operations manager, and Jennifer Onifer, who's the park manager. We are here to seek the Commission's advice and comment on the proposed project. Next slide. Back one slide, please. Yeah, this is right. Thanks. We are proposing to use Waterways Connection Initiative funding for this project. This funding was allocated to state parks by Senate Bill 170, also known as the Budget Act of 2021. DBW has provided $10 million for BLF projects that meet the goal of expanding outdoor access to communities of at least 2,500 population that are also, that are located near rivers and waterways and that lack meaningful connection to nature. The proposed project fits the funding criteria and will provide a connection to nature for the community of Winters. The funds must be spent or encumbered by June 30th, 2027. Next slide. Capel Cove Boat Launch Facility is located on Lake Berryessa in the eastern portion of Napa County in Northern California. It is approximately 67 miles west of Sacramento. The commission visited Capel Cove yesterday as part of the commission tour. Next slide. Lake Berryessa was created in 1957 by the construction of Monticello Dam. This dam provides flood control protection to the city of Winters and other downstream communities, as well as high-quality water supply for farming and domestic use for several cities in Solano County. The applicant for the proposed project is the Bureau of Reclamation. The BOR owns all the boat launches on Lake Berryessa, including Capel Cove BLF, but Capel Cove is the only one operated by BOR. All other BLFs on the lake are leased by BOR to private enterprises, and BOR charges $10 for launching fee at Capel Cove. As seen on this slide, Capel Cove is located at the southern end of Lake Berryessa. Next slide. This slide shows an overview of the facility, including the locations of the restroom, the day use area, and the launch ramp. Construction of Capel Cove was completed in the late 1970s with funding from DBW, but some of its facilities have fallen into disrepair. The boat ramp and parking area are in good condition, but the bathroom is not currently operational, and BOR would like to increase the launch capacity of the boat ramp. Next slide. A recent development that is affecting boaters throughout California is the discovery of the golden mussel in the Delta in fall 2024. The image on the right side of this slide shows locations in which the mussels have been found. Measures are being taken across the state to stop the further spread of this invasive species. And Capel Cove is currently closed due to the golden mussel, so that procedures can be implemented by BOR to protect against the spread of golden mussels into Lake Berryessa. Next slide. There are currently 45 vehicle trailer parking stalls and 20 single vehicle parking stalls. Of those, one vehicle trailer stall and two single vehicle trailer stalls are marked for accessible use but don't meet current ADA requirements. The existing ramp is a two-lane ramp with one boarding float seen here to the right of the two lanes. Since there is not a second boarding float on the left, boaters tend to take up the entire launch area when launching, which blocks access to the left lane. This makes the facility inefficient and causes longer wait times for launching and retrieving on busy days. Next slide. This project would install an additional boarding float opposite the existing boarding float to alleviate ramp congestion on busy days. Next slide. The existing restroom shown here has not been operational since 2016, and porta potties are currently used instead. Next slide. The proposed funding would develop engineering plans for installation of an additional 60-foot boarding float, redesign of the parking area for ADA compliance, repair or replacement of the non-functioning restroom, and installation of an information kiosk and project signage. The Bureau will be required to determine if the project area typically experiences frequent use by a non-English-speaking population, and if so, must also provide signage in the local predominant non-English languages. Next slide. Phase one funding in the form of a $250,000 planning grant would be used for developing engineering plans, permitting, and to establish an engineer's cost estimate. The total estimated project cost, including the construction phase, is estimated at just under $1.6 million, as shown in this slide. Due to the recent extreme escalation in construction costs in California, it is difficult to establish an accurate estimation of construction costs. An escalation factor of 9% or 3% per year has been added to the cost estimate, and the table also includes a 10% construction contingency reserved for any unforeseen situations that may occur during the construction process. Next slide. BOR estimates that there are currently 11,070 boat launches annually at Capel Cove. DBW estimates that usage would increase approximately 15% after completion of this project, which would result in approximately 254,610 boat launches over the 20-year life of the improvements. DBW analysis determined that the benefit-cost ratio for the proposed project is 1.94. Projects with a benefit-cost ratio over 1 are worthy of funding consideration from a financial perspective. Next slide. At this time, DBW seeks commission advice and comment on this proposed $250,000 planning contract with conditions to the Bureau of Reclamation for the proposed improvements to the Capel Cove boat launching facility described in the May 8, 2025 feasibility report. A condition of the funding is that BOR, at its expense, must complete all National Environmental Policy Act requirements. No funding will be disbursed until this condition is met. Next slide. This concludes my presentation. My contact information is provided here, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Excellent. Thank you, John. Thank you for your presentation and your time on the tour yesterday. It was great to be with you and our partners over there. At this time, I just want to see, do we have any public comments for this project?
There are no public comments.
Okay. And then want to look to my commissioners in person, and then I'll get to virtual if there's any. Yes.
Thank you for a great presentation, and really enjoyed the tour yesterday. I wanted to ask you about this benefit-cost ratio and the analysis behind that. Mm-hmm. So I think we understand the costs very well. They're very well outlined here. Could you talk to us a little bit more about the benefits, specifically whether they're driven purely by these estimated boat launches or if there are other assumptions that have also been considered?
There's a calculator we use. Karen or Joe, would you be able? I think I'm fairly new to the commission, or to boating and waterways, I mean. So I think Karen would be better suited to answer.
Perfect.
Good morning, commissioners, and welcome, Commissioner Zader. The benefits are determined by the boaters' quantified experience of being able to go out and boat. In, 2018, 2019, we did a boating needs assessment study, and at that point, Sacramento State University identified what the new user value, which they quantify it as since this is their money, how, and I don't understand the economics behind it or the financial analysis behind it, but it's essentially saying, what monetary value am I receiving from this experience? And in recreation, they do this for parks, they do this for all these other experiences, but they did it for boating specifically, and so each region of California, the boating needs assessment study identified certain values for the experience that boaters would receive in those areas. And so what we do is we apply that number to the number of expected boaters and how much usage it would get, and then do the costs exceed that or not? I don't know if that's helpful.
Well, thank you for that. That's very helpful. So it's essentially the estimated number of boat launches multiplied by an imputed value, right?
Correct.
At a high level of abstraction, that seems to be how it works.
Yes.
And I will say the benefit-cost ratio here looks very attractive, and I think we can all agree with that. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Karen. Is there any other comments? Commissioner Hallahan?
Thank you, Chair. Is it possible for us to get a copy of the boating estimate study just to take a look at it? I would be interested in when it was done and how they abstracted the data. I mean, I'd be curious if, like, off-road vehicles is higher than boating. No, but I would like to see how they rate it and maybe compare it with a couple others, something like that. So if I could get that, it'd be great.
Yeah, sure. You're referring to the boating needs assessment that Karen was speaking about? Okay, yeah, we can look at that. We can get you there, yeah.
Any other comments from my in-person commissioners? Anyone virtually? Do we have any comments at this time? Commissioner Peer.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions. Number one, when you say there's 11,000 users of the facility, are they just what I would describe as discrete users, or is that the same 10 guys going 100 times a year, if you understand the distinction I'm making? Because I think that's an important metric to take into consideration. Do you have any knowledge of that?
I don't. That was the figure that BOR submitted in their application. Jennifer may have.
I can help. Jennifer Onifer, the park manager at Berryessa. Our team maintains a set of traffic counters, and that's how we collect our visitor data for Capel Cove. And so, to your point, sir, it's not going to differentiate between the regular users who may have an annual pass or the people who are coming to Capel the first time that year.
Okay. So, okay, because I think that's an important. It's an important metric, obviously, right? Just, we don't want to spend a lot of money for the same guys to use the place. So I don't know if you can adjust your model to take that into account, but if you understand my concern. But that's more of a comment. Also a question for my own edification. Do you guys charge a fee for access?
There's a $10 fee for boat launches, and the day, they're just going for day use, the fee is $5.
Okay. And then finally, I'm just a little unclear, just sort of jurisdictionally here. So this is a Bureau of Reclamation project. Do I have that right? And that's who the grants is going to?
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and then, okay, so, and who gets the fees?
Bureau of Reclamation gets the fees. And as I mentioned earlier, there are a number of other boat launches around Lake Berryessa, but this is the only one that's actually operated by BOR. All of the others are also owned by BOR, but they are operated by private enterprises as a lease from BOR.
Okay. So I guess now here's my question. Why is the Boating and Waterways being asked to fund a study that's going to primarily benefit a BOR project? And maybe I'm off the mark, and if I'm off the mark, just tell me how I'm off the mark. Well, and I'm going to add a follow-up question, because this is only $200,000. It's only, you know, it's not real money these days, as they say. But presumably, we're going to come back when the study's finished, and they're going to want another $1.7 million in grants to fund out the building of the project. So
yeah.
That's where I'm just a little confused why Boating and Waterways is.
You know, John, the director would like to give some feedback here. Comments.
There's a couple things here. Director Pearson, it's good to see you. while there are other concession operated docks that allow access to Berryessa, the fees there begin at about $25 for day use. And this one is a low cost, so it only charges $10. The money goes back to the operation. But also, in light of what's happening today, the Lake Berryessa staff, all of their seasonal staffing got cut. So the people who are operating that park right now are career federal employees who should be managing the park, which they are doing at the same time that they are doing the on-the-ground work. And I think as a sister land and water management agency, this money is especially valuable to both the public and the recreational opportunity. And what we did learn at this tour yesterday is that on many days, that boat ramp facility is not only so actively used that the whole parking lot is full, but oftentimes there will be a one-mile area along the road with cars parked there and people walking in. So it is, it's a really important facility, and I think that the lower cost, one of the big points of the WCI money was to deliver services to lower cost disadvantaged communities, and it seemed like, just on the surface, it looked like it's absolutely doing that. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Quintero. Okay,
those are great answers to my questions. Thanks, you guys.
Commissioner Hallahan, anything to add?
Yeah, I just am wondering, once you brought up the federal aspect of this, does the BOR get to keep the money locally and use those funds? Like, so you're managing Lake Berryessa areas, you're getting lease money from some of the other docks. Are you able to make that like a separate financial area to pay your people?
So leaving the concessions out of my answer for the moment, which is a different funding source. For just Capel Cove, we were authorized under the Federal Land Recreation Enhancement Act to keep the funds that are brought in at that site. So they do stay local. Currently, they are going into a law enforcement contract for enhanced law enforcement, which is something else that Capel Cove also benefits from, as additional resources brought to bear by the Napa County Sheriff's Office for that site.
So you take some of these funds and you help the Napa County do maritime water activities there?
We allocate those funds to pay for a contract for the Sheriff's Office to provide additional resources to that site than they otherwise would be without it.
That's excellent, admirable work. Yeah. I'd like to ask one more thing. Have you considered or ever done the free life jacket program where it's a loaner program?
We currently have a free life jacket loaner program in our direct managed day use areas just north of there. I believe from time to time we have had a stand at Capel, but I believe at this time we just don't currently have one right there at Capel.
Yeah, when looking at the space and the lower income that goes there, I think it would be an ideal place for especially really small children's life jackets.
Agreed, and Coast Guard Auxiliary has also been very active in working with us and has offered to assist with getting additional jacket stands up, and I can definitely bring that up with them. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks for your work. It was a beautiful lake.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
Okay. Excellent. At this time, I think we move forward and do roll call on the project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will now take a roll call for the vote on the Capel Cove Boat Launch Facility Grant, starting with Jose Gonzalez from Sacramento, California. A or nay?
Aye.
Maggie Hallahan from San Francisco, California.
Yay.
Hampus Edsader from Thousand Oaks.
Yay.
Gonzalo Medina from Long Beach.
Yay.
Maricela Rosales from Crestline.
Yay.
Tom Peer, Vice Chair.
Aye.
And Katie Hawkins, Chair.
Yay. Excellent. Thank you all for the presentation and the partners. Thank you so much. Okay, moving on, I would like to go back to our first presentation, if Casey is available. Do we have sound?
Can you hear me now?
We can. Yes.
All right. Thank you. Apologies for the hiccup earlier. Not sure what happened there, but moving on. Slide, please. Thank you, AGP, and good morning, Madam Chair, fellow commissioners, Director Quintero, everyone joining us today. Thank you for your time. My name is Casey Caldwell. I'm a project manager in DBW's Grants and Loans Unit, and today I am presenting Marin County Parks' request for a $600,000 construction grant from the Waterway Connections Initiative Program for construction of boater amenities at the Bucks Landing Non-Motorized Boat Launch Facility. This facility is located in the county of Marin on San Pablo Bay. The DBW grant would partially fund construction, supplementing additional construction funding being provided and obtained by the county. With me today representing Marin County Parks is Craig Richardson, Senior Planner, and we are here to seek the Boating and Waterways Commission's advice and comment on the proposed project. And to start off, to get everyone oriented, Bucks Landing is located at the red marker near the center of this slide. The facility sits on the southern shore of Galenas Creek on the west side of San Pablo Bay, north of San Francisco. The facility is on county land just north of the city of San Rafael and just east of the community of Santa Venetia. Slide, please. The Bucks Landing site is in the blue box here and is located near several other non-motorized facilities, which are highlighted here in the yellow boxes. Bucks Landing is in a unique location right where Galenas Creek and San Pablo Bay meet. Walking through these real quick, McGinnis Park is near the lower left corner of the slide, and McGinnis is also on Galenas Creek, farther inland, about a mile or so from Bucks Landing. China Camp and McNear's Beach Park are in the far lower right-hand corner, and they're both about 4 or 5 miles southeast of Bucks Landing. And far to the north is Black Point Boat Launch, also a Marin County Parks facility, as are the rest of these except for China Camp. Black Point is about 7 or so miles north of Bucks Landing. And between those two points, there is a lot of beautiful wetlands that make for a uniquely enjoyable boating experience, but there aren't any developed non-motorized launch facilities, public access between those two. And China Camp is a state facility that charges $5 for use. The other facilities in yellow are all county facilities, and the county does not charge to use those facilities, and the county also does not plan to charge for Bucks Landing. Slide, please. So this is an overhead view of the site. Bucks Landing is more than just a boat launch. It's a multi-use park with picnic tables and is surrounded by lush wetlands that birds love, making this a prime bird watching location. The park sits on a total of 37 acres on the southern bank of Galenas Creek. Vehicles enter from the south and creek access is at the north end of the site. A restroom is near the facility entry. And until recently, this facility has separate private owners for the western and eastern sections, before the county bought both sections in 2020 and 2022. Due to that historic division, there is a fence that still runs through the facility. And parking here is not marked, it's not formalized. Visitors park either on the perimeter of the property or next to that fence. Slide, please. So a safe and functional pier and boarding float are essential for non-motorized boaters to have safe waterway access to this location. However, the existing wooden pier and float that you see here, they're old, dilapidated, and generally well past the ends of their useful lives. The pier's condition and design make safe non-motorized boating access to Galenas Creek from Bucks Landing difficult at high tide, which is what you see here. And as you'll see in a moment, it's almost impossible at low tide. Next to the pier, there's a very worn and unmaintained public access boat ramp where trailered vessels can launch. I'm not going to talk about that ramp very much today because that ramp is outside the scope of this project and the county has no current plans to change it. Slide, please. There's a sign at the entrance to the pier right now informing visitors that pier is closed due to unsafe conditions, as you've just seen. Slide, please. And so here's another look at the pier's immediate surroundings. In this picture, again, taken at high tide. And in the foreground here, you can see the path to walk up to the pier is unimproved. So even if the pier could be repaired outside of doing a full replacement, creating safe access to the pier structure itself for visitors of all physical abilities would require extensive changes. In addition, on the uneven ground near the pier, there may be tripping hazards walking to the pier, particularly for a visitor carrying a non-motorized vessel through this area. Slide, please. So you've seen the site at high tide, and this picture was taken at low tide back in January. This is an aerial photo from above the creek looking landward. In the low tide, you can see lots and lots of mud by the pier throughout the ramp area all the way down to the end of the float. If the pier were safe for public access, and if the float were situated farther out into the water into Galenas Creek, you can imagine how the issues with the mud could be overcome. Slide, please. And looking out towards the water, you can see why people would want to overcome those issues and enjoy this site. The scenery around Bucks Landing is beautiful, it's peaceful, and here you can see Galenas Creek past the end of the pier. Access to San Pablo Bay is a short paddle out to the east, which is to the right on this picture. And the creek is wide. This is a local favorite water access point for kayakers and for hunters. Slide, please. So we talked about the pier and the float. In addition, the county would install one ADA accessible parking space near the pier. The pier is on the left side of this picture, and the vehicle on the right of this picture is situated next to where the county would install that accessible parking space and the accompanying access aisle. That parking space would be connected to a raised boardwalk that would lead from the new parking to the new pier across that narrow dirt road that you see here in between. Slide, please. So this final view I'll show you of the site is where an access pathway would be established from the south end of the park, where the restroom currently is, to the north end, where the pier is. The county would fund construction of a pathway that would be built essentially adjacent to that fence, providing that walkway access from the south to the north ends of the site. And again, that white truck that you see on the right here is parked near that current pier, just to give you perspective on where we are. Slide, please. So the county has already funded designs for this project up to 30%. That 30% plan is shown here, and I'll walk through the planned amenities briefly. I'll start with the pile-supported pier, which is in the middle of the slide. This pile-supported pier would be 60 feet long, 6 feet wide, and it would replace the current pier at the same general location. But this pier would start a little farther landside and extend about to the current intersection between the pier and the dock. Just to the north of that pier, there would be a 42-foot-long metal gangway that would extend from the pier to the floating dock. And that pile-guided boarding float would be 35-foot by 12-foot pile-guided low-freeboard floating dock that will provide a safe place to launch into the water, well clear of that muddy bank that I showed you earlier in this presentation. Returning to the landside amenities, on the left, you'll see the location of the formalized accessible parking right next to that fence. And next to that spot is a 5-foot-wide raised boardwalk connecting the accessible parking to the pier. And finally, there's an on-grade walkway linking the pier and the accessible parking to amenities at the site's southern end of the park. Three quick notes before I move on from here. First, besides the accessible parking space, no changes or improvements to parking are currently planned. Second, as previously discussed, the old launch ramp next to the pier is not a part of this project. And third, as I'll discuss over the next couple of slides, the uses of DBW's grant funding will be limited to the boarding float and the gangway in the pier that enable access to the float. Slide, please. So here is a list of scope items. And again, the DBW grant would fund the boarding float, the gangway connecting the pier and the float, and the pier. Now, the county will fund the cost of those components beyond what the DBW grant would cover, and the county would also fund the path of travel between site components, encompassing both the on-grade walkway and the raised boardwalk. The county will also fund designation of that ADA accessible parking spot close to the pier, and it will fund appropriate signage as needed. Slide, please. This is DBW's preliminary cost estimate based on the 30% designs, and since we're only at 30% right now, this is really a conceptual cost estimate. It includes DBW's typical allowances for soft costs like permitting and inspection, and we're factoring in 2 years of escalation. The main takeaway here for the commission is DBW intends to help fund the pier, the gangway, and the float up to that maximum $600,000 total grant amount. The county would pay for the rest either wholly or partially from its own funds, and possibly with help from another state or local funding source that has not yet been identified or obtained. And to be clear, a standard condition of DBW grant agreements is that the project must be fully funded before DBW funds can be expended on it. And with that requirement in mind, our staff will remain in contact with the county on this topic throughout design to ensure resources remain adequate to proceed with all scope items as currently envisioned. Slide, please. So DBW calculated the benefit cost ratio for this project based on the number of estimated launches that would occur at the new facility over a 20-year span. So that's individual launches, not users. And that's compared to the costs to boaters of building this facility and then using and maintaining it afterwards. Because the facility currently isn't in safely usable condition, we're analyzing the benefits and costs here as though the project is creating a brand new facility instead of just an incremental improvement. And we conservatively estimate annual launches at Buck's Landing to start at about 1,000 per year the first year it's open. We expect, in reality, probably be more than that. This is 20 launches a week. We expect there to be more than 20. But just looking at the financials, we're being conservative. So projecting that 1,000 at the beginning and then a modest 2% usage increase in each of the following 20 years, that gives us an estimate of about 25,000 launches all told over those 20 years. Our benefit cost ratio based on that usage level and the cost to boaters is 1.13. That means benefits do exceed costs, even with our usage estimates being conservative. And this ratio is above the minimum standard of 1.0 that generally makes a project worthy of consideration for funding. And again, this is with very conservatively estimated benefits. Bear in mind, this ratio considers only DBW's costs and the project's boating specific benefits. So it doesn't include costs that will be borne by sources besides DBW. And it doesn't factor in recreational benefits to the park that aren't connected to boating, so like the bird watching, use of picnic tables. and other funders may focus on other kinds of recreational benefits at the site, but DBW's focus is narrowly on benefits attached to investments to our funds and boating. Slide, please. We are proposing two conditions for the grant. The first condition is that the county complete environmental requirements, including CEQA and NEPA, if necessary, at their own cost. This is a standard condition for DBW boating facility grants where environmental work hasn't been completed yet, and that's the case here. Second condition is that the county must resolve any significant tripping hazards for people moving around near the pier. Such hazards would include anything near the pier where we could reasonably expect the public to traverse in the process of accessing and using the pier. Slide, please. So, in conclusion, DBW seeks commission advice and comment on this proposed $600,000 Waterway Connections Initiative grant with conditions. Marin County Parks for the improvements to the Bucks Landing non-motorized boat launching facility described in the May 8th, 2025 scope summary report. This completes my presentation, and Mr. Richardson and I welcome any questions the commission may have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Casey. Wonderful presentation. And again, the time at the tour site yesterday, incredible work. So thank you. At this time, I want to see if we have any public comments.
Madam Chair, we do not have any public comments.
Okay, excellent. I'll look to my in-person commissioner, fellow commissioners first for comments. I see Commissioner Rosales.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Casey, for that presentation, and I really appreciate the field trip we had at Bucks Landing. Just wanted to recognize that they're doing a great job with Spanish translations, sharing with us that they have done the community demographics to focus on the community, so Spanish translations is always important for those communities. I am looking at the Bucks Landing 30% design. You know, I do appreciate that there is a parking space for ADA. I also want to provide a recommendation, if possible, to, you know, if there's space to put one on the other side. While working at Disability Rights Legal Center in my younger years, we got many calls from folks who wanted to access docks or places, and one of the issues that they experienced was the parking spot didn't, even though there's slashes, if there is a regular parking right next to theirs, that it would impede from someone exiting if there were a wheelchair user or a cane user, someone who needed more space to move around. So having an additional ADA parking spot reduces the impact to those needs to be able to move around. So just wanted to consider that as a part of the design. And then also looking at, you know, if someone is a wheelchair user or a cane user, sometimes they're different sizes. So really consider the size of the boardwalk and any walkways moving forward in your design. Thank you.
Excellent. Are there any other questions? Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'll echo Commissioner Rosales' comments, and it was a wonderful place to visit. It's beautiful. It was really nice to see that there's a concessionaire there that was operating, it looks like, and was offering access to the water. I think that's extremely important, so I was glad to see that that was already in place there, operating semi-frequently, and I hope they continue to do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Excellent. Yes, Commissioner Hallahan.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everyone. It's a really beautiful area. I went to elementary school right in that area and have seen the changes over many decades. I really love the ideas of the design, and I'm going to bring up a larger idea to talk about, and that is over the last 10 years, because the bay is sledging in and it's so hard to get permits to dredge, many, many people are now calling things non-motorized. And that makes people who have fishing boats that might be, you know, even 12 feet or 14 feet that have a motor feel like they can't use the space. And Bucks Landing was always a small boat fishing access to San Pablo Bay. And more experienced fisher people know how to come in to the areas of San Pablo Bay that are mostly muddy, and they just bring their motor up and they wear the right kind of gear to just sledge through a few feet of mud to get to the launch or, you know, the place to pull their boat out. So I'm just wondering if I can ask the very specific question, if we are getting funds for this project through the non-motorized federal grant system, or if this is just our regular funding and it could be motorized, or maybe we could start a new terminology saying small boat motor or 25 horsepower and smaller motor. When I talked with the site property manager who was more in charge with submerged water law in the area, he said, and he had a great term, just saying the bureaucracy of the permit for dredging or even just doing a small amount of dredging is a hurdle that the Marin County isn't willing at this point to cross. So if you could comment clearly to me about where the funds are coming and if it has to be called non-motorized, or if you have ever heard of another term that says small boat motorized or small motorized boat launch facility. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll invite Karen Dill to speak to the funding sources and potential for reclassifying in the future, and I'll invite Mr. Richardson to speak to the uses of the facility for both motorized and non-motorized uses.
Thank you, Commissioner Hallahan, for that question. We have not considered differentiating, so we'll take that into consideration for boating and waterways. It's important for us currently, but not to say that we won't change this in the future. But historically, it's primarily motorized boaters who pay into the fund, and so it's that. And the needs for motorized boaters are different than the needs for non-motorized boaters. So from a construction perspective, those categories help us to determine what types of amenities we're going to provide, as well as it helps to identify who's ultimately funding the project. This particular project is funded by Waterways Connections Initiative. So we just call it a non-motorized site. It doesn't mean that it's going to be named a non-motorized site when it's ultimately the sign goes up. But for us, that's where our target is as far as design goes, is that it will have a low freeboard float rather than a standard float for motorized vessels. I don't know if that answers your question.
I actually, on a sidebar, the division deputy director and I have spoke about this because I find it very limiting for people to understand the idea that maybe back in the day people just called it small boat. So small boat was really honored, like even non-motorized sailboats. And, you know, these are boats with very small draft that could be like a non-motorized boat, but they have a motor on them. And I just don't want those people, because there's a lot of those people. Like, actually, when you look at the numbers of how many registered boats there are, it's like a big number of those, of the percentage. So I just want them to feel welcome into these places, because I could see tire marks, trailer marks in the mud. So people were using some type of launch system with the ramp, because I could see clearly in the mud. So some people are trying to keep using bucks the way it was used 20, 30 years ago. And I just want them to make sure that when you design it, that maybe we could just have a creative talk about another way to call spaces like that.
Thank you. Our intent is not to exclude, but to include. So right now, the facility is used by small motorized boats, as it has historically. It's not in a condition now where we can invite people who don't know how to use the facility appropriately, because as you see, if someone gets stuck out there in low tide or they don't know how to use the facility appropriately, but the county is not intending to exclude the motorized boaters who currently have access and are willing to be trained in how to read the tide chart and know what those conditions are. So our intent is to include rather than exclude.
I just think that since we're a state organization, then once we start using words like that, it starts feeling excluding to my friends that have small boats and are fishermen and stuff like that. So when they told me, the land's property manager said, oh, we're going to let those people still come in. They just know how to come in. And then it becomes like a knowledge base piece. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, oh, yeah, we're going to let that happen. So it just maybe it could say experienced small boat operators or California, you know, holding the California boating card, that class and those tests would help someone actually know enough knowledge because it's in the boating card curriculum and those people should have boating cards. So, you know, maybe there's something. I'm just opening it up to a longer conversation so we don't ice out small boats with motors.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Deputy Director Fernandez, did you have anything you want to add?
No, I just wanted to let Commissioner Hallahan know, yes, we would consider our looking, we'll consider what you're discussing, I mean, what you mentioned.
Okay, excellent. Director Quintero?
You can tell when I want to, it's like I want to say something, sorry. Look, something to go back to, something we talked about earlier that I want to make sure we offer, and that is that the state parks a few years ago put together or published a sea level rise adaptation plan for the coast, and that includes the bay. And I think what the vice chair brought up earlier about what he experienced in Mississippi, I think that we, in future boating commission meetings, we could have our natural resources come in and talk to you about what we are doing along the coast. And rather than having prescriptive solutions, what it's really about is what are the questions you ask and how do we address the problems that we're facing, because they're going to continue to be dynamic. But there's a really thoughtful document that we published 2 years ago on that, so I'll suggest that. The other thing is that your idea, Commissioner Hallahan, is on the money, because one of the things that State Parks is doing right now is looking at the language that we use in everything we do, in our permits, in our brochures, our images. We actually are just completing a study on how the public perceives us and what does our messaging look like. And it doesn't match everywhere. And I think that we need to continually be looking at that as culture change. Cultures change and activities change. And I'm a paddleboarder and a kayaker on San Francisco Bay. The places that I put in are about 2 miles away. And I also know two things that are important. One of them is right there at Buck's Landing. It is a lower-income community immediately adjacent to that location. And then about 3 miles away, 2.5 miles away, there's a large community called the Canal District, which is primarily the residential area for the service community of the broader Marin County area. And the places where I typically launch, it's expensive and it's tough to get parking there and all of that. And I think that Buck's Landing does offer a really unique opportunity. And also what we heard on the tour is that there used to be a kayak rental business there. But once the pier became, you know, unusable, that disappeared. So my sense is that this investment has the potential to change access and behavior. And also China Camp, which is immediately adjacent to Buck's Landing. It is actively used by the communities from the canal and that neighborhood. So it's a cool idea. Thank you.
Commissioner Hallahan?
I would like to also say I'd love to get a copy of this document. I've read about it, a synopsis of the seawater rise that the California Natural Resources have done. And
it's online.
I've read the synopsis of it, but I want to dig into it deeper. Is there any way, I know that our commission is, you know, within the parks, but is in regards to that, is there a way that maybe you could utilize some of our expertise resources to talk about the problems, the hurdles that small counties have to dredge or to do something so that boats still can go in and out? Because, you know, the ocean rises pretty much just when storms happen, and there's still a lot of mud. Maybe one of the commissioners could help talk about that statewide.
I mean, I think it's a good idea to have a conversation with the team at State Parks and see what, you know, just to inform each other of what we know, what we don't know, and the work that's going on.
Thank you.
Yep, I see that. We'll go virtually online. I see Vice Chair Peer has his hand raised.
Yeah, I just want to Maggie was saying how the idea, or maybe I forget who was saying it, about trying to open this up to access. And I just want to say that I really love the design, because as a person who's married to a woman who uses a wheelchair, to pull up at a site like that, she's just instantly, as it exists now, she's instantly excluded from access. And so I think that moving this project forward, the way it's designed, I think it's absolutely a fabulous idea. And I don't have any comments, but I did have a quick question, because a director raised the question of China Beach. How China Beach is what? Is it redundant to this? I mean, in other words, is that also a non-motorized, or so now we should get our nomenclature correct. But is what does that facility look like? Just so I can get my head, because I've boated all the way through San Pablo Bay and have done a lot of just cruising there. What is the China
the director,
Camp facility? What,
look I think like? China Camp, which is a state park, which is adjacent to the facility.
Right. Yeah. What does China Camp look like? That's what I'm questioning.
It's a park. It's a state park on the other side of the facility that gets tens of thousands of people from all over the state, and it has a trail system and rich biodiversity and habitat.
I'm familiar with all that. I'm trying to figure out what the launch facility looks like.
There is no launch. Yeah. It's a beach, so you.
There's not. Okay. Yeah. All right.
You would
okay.
have to carry. That's what I probably, you know, 50 feet from your car to the yep. beach, but it's a sandy. It's a gravel beach. Actually,
yeah, I know what it looks like. I just thought maybe there was some launching facility there that I hadn't seen, but that's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Okay. I'm not seeing any other commissioner comments. I'll just say I was really energized to hear about the public engagement that happened on this project with the community members, but also the cover and support that happened by the commuters with Measure A and the voters within the county. So it really shows that this is authentic, genuine engagement for this project. So with that, Clerk, I'd like to take this to a vote, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll now be taking a roll call vote for Buck's Landing Non-Motorized Boat Launch Facility Grant. We'll start with Jose Gonzalez from Sacramento, California. Aye or nay?
Aye.
Maggie Hallahan, San Francisco, California.
Aye.
Hampus Edes Sater, Thousand Oaks, California.
Aye.
I'm going to get it straight. Gonzalo Medina from Long Beach.
Aye.
Maricela Rosales from Crestline?
Aye.
Tom Pierre, Vice Chair?
Aye.
Katie Hawkins, Chair?
Aye. Excellent. Thank you to the staff and the community members that brought this forward. It's exciting and, excited to see how this advances. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to the third project then, and I'm going to invite Joe Dukes up.
Good morning, Madam Chair Hawkins, commissioners, and everyone in attendance. And on Zoom, my name is Joe Dukes, project manager with the Division of Boating Waterways, and I am presenting the City of Stockton's request for a $2 million Waterways Connection Initiative funding contract for improvements to the non-motorized access at the Lewis Park boat launching facility. And here in person to represent the City of Stockton, behind me is Madison Lozada, administrative analyst with the city. And we are here to seek the commission's advice and comment on this proposed project. Next slide. We are also proposing to use the Waterways Connection Initiative money to fund this project. The proposed project fits the funding criteria and will provide that opportunity for recreation connection to the City of Stockton. Next slide. The Lewis Park boat launching facility is located in the City of Stockton, approximately 40 miles south of Sacramento. The commission has had the opportunity to see this facility in person during yesterday's tour. Next slide. This is an overhead view of the Lewis Park facility. Starting from the entrance on the bottom right of the image is the entrance to the 73 acres Lewis Park, and to the left is the Lewis Park boat launching facility, the little red dot near the center of the image. Next slide. The Lewis Park boat launching facility was constructed in 1964 by the city of Stockton. The facility features a two-lane boat launch ramp, power-guided boarding floats, vehicle-traded parking, and accessible a walkway to a fishing access dock. DPW funded the latest improvements in 2003 that widened the ramp to four lanes. We added parking, sidewalks, and other various improvements to the facility. The city is now seeking funding to develop a non-motorized boating access at this facility. Next slide. The facility currently features a four-lane boat launch ramp. Next slide. The existing boat launch ramp and power-guided boarding floats are in good working condition and are expected to last at least a minimum of another 10 years. Next slide. There's a pathway that runs parallel along the ramp. Next slide. This pathway has many bumps and cracks and is currently out of compliance with accessibility standards. Next slide. The existing power-guided boarding float and gangway that runs parallel to the pathway is dilapidated and is not suitable for non-motorized crafts because the existing boarding floats sits higher, has a higher deck elevation to the water, which is not preferable for non-motorized launching. Next slide. The city recently demolished the restroom, so the facility currently does not have a boulder restroom. Next slide. And the city recently slurry sealed and paved and striped the parking area. Next slide. So this is the proposed concept plan for the project. The proposed funding would complete engineering designs, acquire permits, and construction of a new power-guided low freeboard boarding float and gangway access with concrete abutment. And that would be situated on the top left portion of the image there. A two-unit unisex restroom, accessible parking near the restroom, and a path of travel to the amenities and a project signage. Next slide. The total estimated project cost for this project is $2 million. The table includes a 15% construction contingency reserved for any unforeseen situations during construction. Next slide. We estimate that approximately 3,000 non-motorized boaters will benefit from the improvements annually, and over 60,000 boaters would benefit from the improvements at a 20-year life of this project. And DBW analysis established that a benefit-cost ratio exceeding 1 is worthy from a financial perspective. For this project, the ratio is a 1.19. Next slide. We also recommend a condition for the grant that CEQA would be completed before any funding would be expended by the end of the year. Next slide. And it's time DBW seeks the Commission's advice and comment on this proposed $2 million WCI funding with conditions to the city of Stockton for the non-motorized improvements at the Lewis Park Boat Launch Facility. And next slide. This concludes my presentation. My contact information is provided here, and I'd be happy to attend any questions.
Excellent. Thank you, Joe. Thank you again for the time yesterday on the tour. I see Madison's here. It's great to see you. Thank you for coming. At this time, I want to see, do we have any public comment on this project?
Madam Chair, we do not have any public comment.
Okay. I'll go back to my fellow commissioners in person first. Do any of the commissioners have any questions, comments on the project?
Well, thank you, first of all, for a helpful presentation, and it was great being out there with you and your team yesterday, and thank you, Madison, for that excellent presentation yesterday as well. Main question I had was, Have you considered other locations? I know a concern that we discussed following the visit was this pathway, right? And the length of that pathway and how boaters have to walk along it. I was curious if you looked at other locations where you wouldn't have that issue to the same extent.
Right. I think we discussed this thoroughly with the city and also taking into consideration, of course, the distance. And the distance, why I think it's most appropriate for now and what we can identify at this location because of the motorized launching. Of course, we want to keep the non-motorized separate and safe, but yet again, I think improving the walkway, the pathway, make it accessible. And I think the city has discussed with the local constituents and boaters, and that would be suitable for them as well. Do you want to address that?
Madison? I can add some detail.
Yes. Defer to Madison.
Hi, thank you all. It was great seeing you all yesterday. To the point of, honestly, inclusivity, we don't want to take away from the motorized users who are currently, now that Lewis Park is open, it was closed due to the Smith Canal project that Sejafco was doing, but we have that launch that Joe had mentioned is nice and ready for our motorized users to access. So our non-motorized users are honestly saying, what about us, especially because Lewis Park is the only free launch in Stockton, California. We have considered other areas, but it's actually further. It was the area that I had mentioned yesterday we didn't have to go see because we took that out of the scope of the project. But we did have an opportunity to speak to more specifically Delta Sculling and Rowing Club and some other clubs that offer kayaking and different services for our community, especially those that are in wheelchairs and may need that ADA or will need that ADA access to the launch and to just to enjoy the scenery. It's a really nice. I know we were all out there yesterday. The boats were going pretty fast, but it's just a nice place to walk and just to see what's going on. And so we were having a discussion on, you guys have to carry those boats. Like, they're carrying them on their backs, essentially. And they said it's no problem. It's just the fact that you guys are going for this money for us to even have access to the water in this way and honestly have a launch area that I won't say is going to be exclusively for them because it's open, obviously, to whoever wants to use it, but our primary goal is for them to be able to use that area. So to answer you in short, no, it won't be a problem for them, specifically Delta Sculling and Rowing. They do a lot of work. I know Tina mentioned this yesterday, but they do a lot of work with our community that needs a little bit of assistance, both economically and physically, emotionally, mentally, so this would be a perfect space for them.
Thank you, Madison. Thank you, Joe. Are there any other comments? Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioners, and for those comments, Mr. Eidsitter. I'm going to get that right, too. And yeah. And thank you, Joe, yesterday for your power driving as we toured all the sites.
Absolutely.
So it was amazing. And for the presentation. And, Madison, thank you for having us there yesterday. When we were discussing the project yesterday at the site, and I'll go back, and I mentioned that for the other project as well, was a lot of the rowing institutions that are there now, the rowing and the sculling group and the Delta group, they have a lot of institutional knowledge on how to use the facility in the area, and they know of it. But when we discussed the ability for access to the water and potentially the city of Stockton finding a way to incorporate kayak rentals, or whether it's done through the city or concessionaire, just how important that is as we look at these projects to be sure that we're thinking about how certainly the groups that are there and know what they're doing are going to benefit from it, and that's tremendous. But in terms of increasing more people boarding a vessel on the water, finding creative ways to get those incorporated into the projects as well. So that's I would just strongly recommend that as we move the project forward, we look at that in the city of Stockton.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for that. I'm not seeing any other comments virtually. No? Okay, I'll just say that when approaching the facility, you saw lots of families out there picnicking, playing soccer. It is really an amazing space that provides for the community a huge value, but also talking about the economic development and what can happen with this improvement and the more folks that it'll bring to this area. And it was really energizing to hear the passion behind it and the community and the engagement. So thank you. With that, Clerk, I'd like to take this to a vote, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, I'll be taking a roll call vote for Lewis Park Non-Motorized Boat Launch Facility Grant, starting with Jose Gonzalez from Sacramento, California. Aye or nay?
Aye.
Thank you. Maggie Hallahan from San Francisco, California. Aye or nay?
Aye.
Hampus Edsader from Thousand Oaks, California.
Aye.
Thank you. Gonzalo Medina from Long Beach, California.
Aye.
Marcela Rosales from Crestline.
Aye.
Tom Peer, Vice Chair from San Francisco.
Aye.
And Katie Hawkins, Chair from Truckee, California.
Aye.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Congratulations, Madison and Tina. Appreciate the tour and the great, amazing work that you're doing in the community. So thank you. We are going to continue to move along here. We have a number of staff program reports to get into. So with that, I would like to invite up. We're going to move on to the next portion of our agenda here with the division program updates. And so I would like to invite Mr. Zamora, and we'll discuss the law enforcement maritime training program.
Good morning. My name is Jesse Zamora. I will be covering the Division of Boating and Waterways, or DBW, Marine Law Enforcement Training Program. DBW's Marine Law Enforcement Training Program provides training courses statewide to law enforcement officers, harbor patrol officers, lifeguards, and others that work in a marine patrol environment. The purpose of the training program is to provide comprehensive, current, and effective training courses with reliable consistency. Statewide training ensures uniform enforcement of boating laws on all California waterways. Pictured here on this slide is one of our instructors teaching students how to perform close quarter maneuvering during an inland boat operator course held at Lake Shasta. Next slide, please. Training numbers are based on a federal fiscal year, since this is how the division reports to the United States Coast Guard. October 1st, 2023 through September 30th, 2024. During this period, the training program operated with a $438,000 budget. The funding was received from the United States Coast Guard Federal Trust Fund for Recreational Boating Safety. We were able to train 381 officers in 25 classes covering 8 separate disciplines. On this slide, instructors are teaching students to evaluate a volunteer drinker in a wet lab using the finger-to-nose test during a boating under the influence course held in Napa, California. Next slide, please. On this slide is our 2025 training calendar. Registration opens annually on November 1st. Our classes are highly sought after and generally fill up within the first month of registration opening. Next slide, please. The division continues to work closely with partnering agencies throughout the department and the state to maintain a high-caliber instructor cadre. Through these partnerships, the division is able to offer the highest quality training possible by utilizing subject matter experts from throughout the state to serve as instructors. DBW would like to thank you, Commissioner Medina, for your staff, Captain Scott Dixon's contribution on the development of the basic coastal operator course, and we look forward to working with him further for future deliveries. We want to say thank you to our partners that provide talented and professional instructors to share their staff's training expertise on a statewide effort and to be part of DBW's cadre. Without this statewide approach, we would not have a successful training program. In addition, over the last few years, Mothers Against Drunk Driving have been donating their time to come to our Boating Under the Influence class to talk about their resources and the nexus to recreational boating. Next slide, please. Northern California peace officers and organizations, including four state park peace officers and the Division of Boating and Waterways, were recently honored for their efforts in 2023 to curb incidents of driving and boating under the influence during a ceremony hosted by Mothers Against Drunk Driving, or MAD. In Citrus Heights, California, Officers Hurley, Lauren Plunkett, and Hayden McDaniel, who were operating at Folsom Lake at the time, were recognized for their boating under the influence enforcement efforts in 2023. DBW was recognized and awarded the Cynthia and Sophie Peterlin Memorial Award for its Boating Under the Influence training program. DBW's Boating Under the Influence training program has been recognized in the past and continues to be a highly sought-after class with our partnership with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Next slide, please. Now I will cover some of our accomplishments. The division added six new instructors to the training cadre. The courses consist of inland boat operator, boating accident investigation, boating under the influence. DBW recognized the need for new and additional supplies for our inland boat operator course. This year, we were able to purchase approximately 30 new life jackets, instructor shirt and jackets, mariner guides, and rules of the road books. We translated our standard field sobriety test note cards to Spanish. That can be used in the field by officers when conducting a boating enforcement stop. Pictured here is the cadre and students from the inland boat operator course held in Calaveras in 2024. This was the first time Calaveras had hosted the class and was well received and supported by the local administration. Next slide, please. This year, we partnered with Napa County Sheriff to host our Boating Under the Influence course. We hope to continue this partnership and determine a new additional location for the course. Recently, Stanislaus and Napa County Sheriffs have had an increase in BUIs and a desire to support our training program. These agencies are starting to help DBW in facilitating our Boating Under the Influence courses, which we will report more on next year. DBW has historically worked with Los Angeles County Fire on the Marine Firefighter Operations and Rescue Boat Operations courses. However, due to the high demand of this course, DBW is seeking other vendors to support additional deliveries. Here is a picture from our rescue boat operator training hosted by Los Angeles County Lifeguards in Marina del Rey, California. This exercise simulates an underway patient transfer from the Los Angeles County Fire Lifeguard vessel to the United States Coast Guard helicopter. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse, for your presentation. At this time, do we have any public comment?
Madam Chair, we do not have any public comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
Excellent. Fellow commissioners? Commissioner Medina, yes, definitely want to hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And Officer Samora, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And there is a tremendous demand out there from all our enforcement partners and lifeguard agencies on this type of training. So as we move forward in the future, just continue to do what you're doing. We'll do our best to support your efforts and continue the very important and necessary work that needs to be done to protect our boaters.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm not seeing any other comments, but again, just really energized to have a commissioner that is supporting this efforts, and it really kind of embodies like the positivity of having a full commission, but also our incredible staff. So thank you.
Can I ask one question?
Okay. Yeah. Commissioner Hallahan.
I would like to thank you so much for all the accomplishments. It's fantastic. If we were to, the commission or the division, help law enforcement, maritime law enforcement overall, what is what you hear? Like, what would be the number one or number two things that our commission could do to help law enforcement in California, maritime law enforcement?
That's a wonderful question. First, just responding directly to the exact wording of your question, it would be just things that I have been hearing from them, not anything that I can lock down. It's been proven or just...
Yeah, just go ahead and just casually let me know.
Things that we're absolutely hearing. So this year, of course, we're concentrating on voter cards, and we're really getting that out into the field. Everybody that's now required to have a voter card, where previously there was a lot more exceptions. So things like that. We have somebody that's part of our instructor cadre who helps facilitate or as a liaison to the legislature. His name is Doug Powell. Anyways, getting these types of things in place, the support that you've given so far, getting these types of things in place, give them an opportunity not only to enforce what's already on the law, but to educate. So most of their stops, they're saying, are they're educational based. And so the type of support that you're giving and that being used as an example, those types of things as we start hearing about them, things that come up. For example, related to the voter card, things that they talk about as something, again, this is just from what I'm hearing, that presents a problem, is that renters are not required at specific times to have these type of requirements. And so that these individuals that are renting boats are often time inexperienced. And again, this is just from what I'm hearing. So things that support them moving forward as we come up as a consensus to have these type of things addressed, as you've done in the past, to continue to support them as they feed this kind of information, eventually things that can be done through the legislative chair, and then they can go out in enforcement. That would be an example.
So I understand that when they passed the voter card, they were not able, because of the lobbies with renters, and renting is becoming more and more prevalent because people can't afford to trailer their own boat. So when we did site tours, we saw that specific thing where they're educating renters that should have been educated at the shore for boat safety. And that is a legislative decision, obviously. Yeah. What about writing tickets and then they're just labeled miscellaneous and people aren't? Do you hear that too as a problem?
I'm going to let Deputy Director Fernandez. Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioner Hallahan, great question. We do have a deputy, I believe, here, or from one of the local law enforcement agencies. So if you don't mind, we'll go through, finish up, and then give an opportunity for you to re-ask your question, or he can address that question because he is the one out there.
Absolutely.
With the public.
Yeah. I just want to be really helpful, and I want to understand what the number one and two issues are so that we can, as a group, collective group, help with that?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Jesse.
Thank you, everyone.
Moving on. Next up, we're going to do the boating accident reporting program and invite up Ms. Texera.
I'm sorry. Good morning. My name is Sam Texera, and I'm the analyst that oversees the Recreational Boating Accident and Financial Aid Program. I will lead my presentation with the Recreational Boating Accident Program. Throughout my presentation today, I will be using the boating terminology accident and incident interchangeably. Next slide, please. Listed here on this slide are the requirements to report a vessel incident to the division. In addition to the operator or owner of the vessel being required to submit an incident report to us, first responders are also required to report. Incident data received by the division is protected under Section 656 of the Harbor's Navigation Code. DBW uses the data collected from these reports to help support our media campaign through targeted marketing to identify where education and outreach is needed and remind law enforcement in our training program of their impact on the waterways. Next slide, please. The division collects boating incidents in two manners. The public completes the boating accident report form, which we refer to as the BAR. A portion of this form was seen on the previous slide. Local law enforcement, fire departments, harbor masters, and other first responders use boating accident database, as seen here on this slide. Next slide, please. Listed here are stats for California incident, injury, and fatality totals collected by DBW for the past 5 years. As you can see, incident totals fluctuate from year to year. In 2024, there were 479 incidents, 214 injuries, and 47 fatalities. Next slide, please. California believes heavily in our partnerships and participation with the National Association of State Boating Law Administrator, also referred to as NASBLA. DBW participates in several NASBLA committees. We currently participate in Engineering Reporting and Analysis Committee, referred to as ERAC. The Boating Safety Unit Manager, Joanna Andrade, and I diligently worked with ERAC committee charge for the Lighthouse webpage. The webpage houses various important documents such as how to write a report, the policy letters and memos from the United States Coast Guard related to accident reporting, and how to handle various scenarios related to carbon monoxide. Next slide, please. Pictured here on this slide is our calendar year 2022 and 2023 report. This is in your commission binder and available on the back table. Historically, DBW has provided these reports and made them available to the public. DBW has made this report available upon request for the public on our website. This concludes my presentation for recreational boating accidents. Next slide, please. I will now cover boating safety and enforcement financial aid program. The purpose of this program is to provide local governmental agencies whose waterways have high usage by transient boaters and an influx tax base to fully support boating safety and enforcement program. The program is not intended to fully fund the participating agencies' boating safety and enforcement activities. And agency participation in this program is entirely voluntary. With state funding from Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund of $11.5 million, the division provided funding for 40 agencies that participated in the program. This made up of 38 counties and 2 cities. Next slide, please. This slide shows an allocation breakdown of those counties and cities that receive funding. Next slide, please. The program activities include search and rescue operations, including the recovery of drowned bodies, enforcement of state and local laws and regulations, inspection of vessels for compliance, and supervision of organized on-the-water boating activities or water events. All activities must have a nexus to recreational boating and comply with allowable costs as outlined in Title 14 California Code of Regulations. Next slide, please. The division provided $11.5 million in funding for fiscal year 23-24 to the participating agencies. In addition, the participating agencies are required to commit 100% of their county boat taxes. This made up a total of approximately $9.3 million. Once counties have expended their boat taxes and the funding from DBW, they operate on their county general fund, which was approximately $47.87 million. The total spent combined between DBW funding and county funding for this program was over $68.7 million. As you can see, the agencies need exceed the program's budget amount. This shows the agency's commitment and importance of the program. Next slide, please. During the February commission meeting, there were various questions on DBW tracks citations and warnings for the California Boater Card and boating under the influence. Listed here are a few of the numbers of citations the division collected from the annual activity report, which is required by participating agencies. This data also includes registration and quagga mussel sticker citations. These performance statistics help to highlight the importance and impact of the program and the need for local government agencies on our waterways. In addition, DBW Boating Safety Unit, Education and Outreach, Grants and Loans, and QZ Grant Program all collaborate to discuss these statistics to better understand the work that is being done on California waterways. At the end of my presentation, I will be introducing Deputy Canepa from San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office to discuss diversions, which was also brought up in the February Commission meeting. Next slide, please. The division partners with various statewide programs that promote boater safety and education. Listed here are a few of those partners. It is through our partnerships that we can reach more of the boating community and have a greater impact on the safety of recreational boating. We are grateful for our partnerships, and we thank them for their continued support and dedication. Next slide, please. Operation Drywater is a nationwide initiative that occurs annually around the 4th of July. The focus is to reduce boating under the influence and promote safe boating practices. The Department of Parks and Recreation, along with the United States Coast Guard and 27 local law enforcement agencies, participated in this event. In addition, leading up to the event, we did a DBW Dockside podcast featuring Deputy John Canepa from San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office and the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers representative, Rhonda Campbell, to discuss the importance of designating a sober operator. Next slide, please. DBW participated in the Sacramento Delta Blitz on July 28, 2024. Yellow County Sheriff's Office hosted this event on the Sacramento River. In addition to Yellow County Sheriff's Office, some of the other counties that participated in this event were Contra Costa County Sheriff, Los Angeles Port Police, Napa County Sheriff, Placer County Sheriff, Sacramento County Sheriff, Sacramento Police Department, San Joaquin County Sheriff, Solano County Sheriff, and Sutter County Sheriff. The event focused on educating boaters on safe boating practices and compliance checks, enforcing statutes and regulations, making the Delta waterways safer with boating under the influence awareness and enforcement. At this time, I would like Deputy John Canepa to join me. Deputy Canepa is San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office and has been on their Marine Patrol unit since 2018. Deputy Canepa has been recognized by Mothers Against Drunk Drivers several years in a row for his boating under the influence enforcement efforts. Deputy Canepa also serves as a lead instructor for the division's Marine Law Enforcement Training Boating Under the Influence course. He will discuss his experience with diversion related to boating under the influence. At the end of his presentation, we will open it up for questions. Welcome, Deputy Canepa.
Hello, how's it going? Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can. We can hear you.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, they asked me to talk about diversion, so I reached out to both our district attorney's office and the public defender's office here in San Joaquin County, and basically to explain diversion. Diversion is a program that they work with through the courts. It could last up to 2 years, and it's only for misdemeanors. So similar to if someone were to throw trash out the window of their car, that would be a misdemeanor. So someone that does not have any criminal history or background can qualify for this diversion program, and the judge can work with them to make it so that the case goes away. The diversion program, like I said, it can last anywhere from whatever time the judge decides. It could be a year, but it could be all the way up to 24 months, where the person violating the crime cannot commit the same crime or another crime. They'd also have to, they might be having to take classes. So as far as boating wise, how this relates to us is, unfortunately, boating under the influence does not have a law exempting it from being having diversion, unlike the roadside DUI. So DUIs are cannot fall into the diversion program. Crimes against children, sex crimes, and domestic violence, because those are four very important misdemeanors that need to go through the court system and the need to be heard in front of a judge. Unfortunately, BUI specifically is not mentioned in the vehicle code, and so our BUIs are getting diverted. Unfortunately, I've had we've arrested people last year that, or excuse me, 2 years ago, that were drinking and driving on a boat. And they went through our courts, they got the diversion program, meaning they had to not drink and drive on a boat for a whole year, which is kind of hard, especially because our boating season is usually seasonal, as you guys know. People are usually drinking and driving between the warm summer months, and so it would be pretty hard for someone to get two BUIs within a year. However, that person that we arrested, they came back the next year and were almost twice the limit they were the initial time, with a lot more people on their boat. And he was basically said, oh, nothing happened to me last time. And so he went with the program. But unfortunately, with the diversion, there's no citations, there's no fines. They do have to take the voter card class. However, this person already had it. And so, yeah, it's becoming a real big safety issue with the courts giving people diversion programs, and they're not taking drinking and driving seriously enough out here on the waterways, and we're seeing it get worse. Does anybody have questions for the diversion program?
Yeah, I was going to open it up. Do we have any public comment on Sam's presentation and the deputies?
There is no public comment at this time, and I do not see any hands raised.
Excellent. Do we have anything from the commission? No? Anything online? Okay. Commissioner Hallahan?
Thank you so much for doing that research. I do spend some time in the Delta, and I really commend the officers that have to just keep going out there knowing that there's nothing sticking to it. There's no penalty, you know, that people overall just feel like it's okay to do because they're not self-accounting for their actions on the water. And it hurts other people that are just, you know, playing around with kids on stand-up boards or, you know, some other kind of, you know, small vessel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's usually the person not drinking that gets hurt. It's usually the passengers or someone else.
Yeah. So do you also have anything to share about how officers can write a citation for not having a boating card or not having California, not having registration for their boat? Do you find that also is in diversion, or do you find that they just dismiss it because it's under miscellaneous codes? Do you know anything about that as well?
So I talked to, also while I was in teaching class in San Diego, they also talked about diversions as well. And surprisingly, if I were to write someone a ticket for not having their life jacket or not having a boater card or their boating registration, they would get a bigger penalty or more of a fine than someone that was actually drinking and driving. Because there's no fine related to the diversion program.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand what you're saying. Are you saying if you write them a ticket for not having a life jacket, what happens?
So if I were to write someone a ticket for not having their life jacket or their boat not being registered or them not having a boater card, they would actually get a bigger penalty than drinking and driving a boat. Because what's happening is the court's giving the people that are drinking and driving on the boat the diversion program, which carries no fine, and they also get it cleaned from their record. So we have to delete the drinking, the boating under the influence report from our system here, and it gets sealed away in the courts. So you would have a bigger penalty for not paying your boat registration than you would for drinking and driving the boat.
So do you find that if you have an officer that writes a ticket for the, you know, saying you don't have a life jacket, it actually goes through the court and there is a fine, like $150 fine is what I heard from some maritime law enforcement. So they pay a fine and that fine goes back to, say, the sheriff or the police department, or does it go into the general fund of the county? Because fuel is expensive, and I'm just wondering if they're out there ticketing a lot, if that money comes back to the maritime unit.
Yeah, so the ticketing, I believe, in our county goes to the general fund, although I'm not exactly correct, but that is correct. Tickets that we write are not getting the diversion program, and they're getting charged.
Okay, because I have talked to people in other counties, and their attorney general, they don't have a code, so they're under miscellaneous, so they get dismissed, not diverted. But it was very interesting about the BUIs. We've had a lot of questions about it this year, so this really clarified it for me specifically, and I guess that's all across the state, is what you're saying.
Yes. I talked to San Diego, and they're seeing a lot of diversion down there. We had the city attorneys from San Diego join our class, and they gave a presentation, and were part of our wet lab.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any other further questions. Just Sam, thank you for your presentation, and the deputy, thank you for joining us, and we'll move on to our next program.
Thank you.
I'd like to invite up Mr. Mundy to come give two presentations, one on the for-hire operators vessel license program, and then the second, the hire insurance verification program.
All right, thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Zach Mundy, and I'm the chief of the Division of Boating and Waterways Boating Safety Unit. I'll be presenting on the Division of Boating and Waterways for-hire operator program, as well as our for-hire vessel carrier insurance verification program. A for-hire license is required by vessel operators who carry more than three passengers for compensation in non-navigable waters. Non-navigable waters being those that do not lead to the ocean. Typical for-hire license holders are held by individuals who operate vessels for fishing excursions, summer camps, tours, water taxis, water skiing services, and other related activities. Pictured is our proctor administering an examination at the Sac State Aquatic Center. Next slide, please. Listed here on this slide are the requirements to become a for-hire operator. In addition, the division has the discretion to waive these requirements when presented with a valid captain's license obtained through the U.S. Coast Guard. Pictured here is the division's contracted proctor, retired Lieutenant Doug Powell, who holds a 100-ton captain's license through the United States Coast Guard, testing at Bass Lake, performing a vessel safety inspection. Next slide, please. As of April 1st, 2025, we have approximately 279 operators licensed by the division. Pictured here, an on-the-water practical exam being administered at Bass Lake near Yosemite. Next slide, please. DBW is currently working with our Parks IT section to develop a web-based application system. This will streamline the process for the end user and staff when submitting and reviewing applications. Currently, applications must be submitted via email or mail, and DBW will have the ability to query information from this database as well. We're currently working on the development and testing phase of this. DBW is currently working to establish a fee for the for-hire operator program pursuant to Assembly Bill AB 865, which requires this program to be cost neutral. DBW plans to consult with other for-hire businesses to help in creating a fee that allows this program to be cost neutral, but also allows the business to not sustain a financial hardship. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation on the for-hire operator program. I'll now go over our for-hire vessel carrier insurance verification program. Next slide, please. The for-hire vessel carriers provide passenger transportation services for a fee, including activities like fishing charters, sightseeing tours, dinner cruises. Under SB 19, Section 9, Article 2.9, subsection 759.2, every for-hire vessel company must obtain and register proof of sufficient insurance coverage. This insurance protects against liability and ensures compensation for damages covering personal bodily injuries, including death, and property damage resulting from accidents during these services. Next slide, please. As of April 1st, 2025, there are 169 active for-hire vessel carrier companies registered. The Division of Boating and Waterways is ongoing in its efforts to educate these companies, ensuring they achieve compliance with state regulations. Certificates are good for one calendar year, and all applicants must renew at the time their insurance expires. The application fee is currently $25. Pictured on this slide is an example of a for-hire vessel insurance verification certificate, which by law, the for-hire vessel company shall post the certificate of filing on the vessel in a prominent location that is visible to the passengers. Next slide, please. The division is currently operating under the Public Utilities Commission general orders until we can establish our own regulations. We continue to work diligently with commercial for-hire companies and commercial marine insurance companies to educate them on DBW's for-hire insurance requirements. On this slide is San Francisco Bay Cruise, which is a company that is in compliance with the for-hire vessel carrier program. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation, and I want to thank you all for the opportunity to present these programs.
Excellent. Thank you, Zach. Looking, do we have any public comment?
Madam Chair, we do not have any public comment, and I do not see any hands raised.
Okay, excellent. Is there any from the fellow commissioners? Okay, Commissioner Hallahan.
I wonder if you know specifically about the dive boat that sunk about 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, that was off coastal, but 37 people died. Mm-hmm. Would that have been having to, since it was off coastal, need to have this certificate?
Well, there's some nuances with the program, too. That one, if it was in coastal waters, would be required to have a Coast Guard license as well. But I believe we do have companies that operate on coastal waters that are required to have the insurance certificates as well. So it depends on, I mean, where it was and how far out it was, too.
So it does. Also. It did go into shore, like Santa Barbara and stuff. So if it was touching shore, it would have had to have had one of these certificates.
Yeah, I'd have to look into the specific situation. It may even be before my time, unless, Ramon, you have any information.
Well, just any boat has to have the certificate if they touch California shores.
Correct. And any for-hire company.
Any for-hire
is required
company.
To have the insurance verification certificates that are operating. Correct.
And do we do site visits also on those vessels?
That's one of the things that we're looking at, is kind of expanding this program to include site visits. We do, when we're out auditing brokers, which you'll hear about soon, we do take that opportunity to meet with them, look at vessel operators. We talk a lot with current companies who are quick to say, well, you know, this company doesn't necessarily have it either. So there's a big education component to it as well.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, excellent. With that, I'm not seeing any other questions. Want to thank you, Zach, for your presentation.
You. Appreciate it.
Yep. And next up, we'll ask Monique to come up. Ms. Carbrell, and you'll be speaking regarding the yacht and ship broker and salesperson licensing side of the yacht and ship program.
Good morning. My name is Monique Cabral, and I am the licensing administrator for California Yacht and Ship Brokers and Salespersons. Today I will present an overview of the licensing section of the Yacht and Ship Program. Next slide, please. The Division of Boating and Waterways, which I will refer to as the division during this presentation, within the Department of Parks and Recreation, is responsible for licensing and regulating yacht and ship brokers and salespersons in California, as outlined in the Yacht and Ship Broker Act. Anyone selling used vessels that are 16 feet or longer and weigh less than 300 gross tons and who does not own those yachts must be licensed in the state. The Yacht and Ship Program includes both a licensing section and an enforcement section. Next slide, please. A yacht broker offers to purchase, solicits, obtains listings, negotiates the purchase, sale, or prices of used vessels on behalf of others. Next slide, please. To be eligible to apply for a California broker's license in California, an individual must be at least 18 years old and meet one of the following qualifications. An individual has been a California licensed yacht broker within the past 5 years, or a yacht salesperson for at least 1 year within the past 5 years. Alternatively, if one has owned and or operated a marine business in California that has sold new or used yachts for a minimum of 3 continuous years, or an individual has been employed as a yacht broker or salesman in another state where that employment was their primary occupation for at least 3 continuous years immediately before applying for a broker's license in California. Next slide, please. The division offers 3 types of broker's licenses. For a corporation to obtain a broker's license, it must be registered with the California Secretary of State and designate a person who qualifies as the broker of record to be the broker for the corporation. Next slide, please. The fees for a new broker's license are currently $200 for the license and $25 for the examination. As of April the 2nd, 2025, there are 296 active licensed brokers in California. Next slide, please. A salesperson is defined as an individual who works for a licensed yacht broker in California. When hiring a new salesperson, a broker must establish a broker salesperson agreement. This agreement must cover material aspects of the relationship between the two parties. Brokers are prohibited from compensating anyone who is not a licensed salesperson or broker. However, a licensed broker can pay a commission to a broker from another state or country. Next slide, please. To become a salesperson, an individual must meet three qualifications. Be sponsored by a California licensed broker, be at least 18 years old. Salespersons and broker applicants must pass the GlideScan background check conducted by the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Both brokers and salespersons are required to pass. Next slide, please. The total fee for obtaining a new salesperson's license is $150. This fee covers a permanent license, which is valid for 1 year, a temporary license, which is valid for 60 days, and the exam fee. This slide also outlines additional fees associated with license renewals, reinstatements, and other related services. As of April 2nd, 2025, there are 596 active permanent salesperson's licenses and 12 temporary salesperson's licenses. The number of temporary licenses can vary significantly, as they can be issued at any time and are only valid for 60 days from the date of issuance. An example of a temporary license is shown on the slide. Next slide, please. Broker and salesperson applicants must take and pass the Yacht and Ship Licensing Examination to receive their license. The Yacht and Ship Licensing Unit conducts these examinations once a month in San Diego and every other month in Sacramento and Lake Paris. The exams consist of 100 multiple choice questions, and applicants must score 70% or higher to pass. The questions cover various topics, including licensing, vessel operation regulation, and the vessel sale process. Applicants for broker and sales licenses are allowed to take the exam up to 3 times. If an applicant does not pass after the 3rd attempt, they must wait 6 months before they are eligible to retake the exam. Next slide, please. Assembly Bill 865 is an approved bill that mandates the division to establish regulations detailing fees that will be charged and collected under this act for examinations, licensing renewals, and other services provided by the division. These fees shall sufficiently reimburse the division for the reasonable costs of the act. The division is currently in the developmental stage of the regulatory process to meet the requirements of AB 865. This concludes the presentation on the licensing section of the Yacht and Ship Program. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm looking to see, is there any public comments for Monique's presentation?
Madam Chair, there are no public comment. I did not see any hands raised.
Okay. And is there anything for my fellow commissioners? Virtual on. Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Next on the agenda, I want to invite up Ms. Whaley to provide a presentation on the enforcement side of the Yacht and Ship Program.
Good morning. We made it still morning. Thank you so much. My name is Emily Whaley. I'm the investigator for the Division of Boating and Waterways Yacht and Ship Licensing and Enforcement Program. The Division of Boating and Waterways enforces harbors and navigation codes, sections 700 through 740, Article 2, which is known as the Yacht and Ship Broker Act, and the California Code of Regulations, Title 14, Article 8. The enforcement section of the Yacht and Ship Program regulates the activities of licensees and monitors activities for which a yacht and ship license is required to ensure regulatory compliance and to provide consumer protection. Next slide, please. The enforcement side of the Yacht and Ship Program operates under three different components. The first component is ensuring regulatory compliance of yacht and ship licensees. The next component is investigating consumer complaints against yacht and ship licensees. And the third component in the enforcement program is monitoring for and responding to unlicensed activity. Next slide, please. The Yacht and Ship Program works to ensure regulatory compliance of our licensees primarily by conducting inspections. During an inspection, our team inspects records to verify that all transactions meet the requirements found in the Harbors and Navigation Code. We can conduct physical inspections of brokerage operations or remote audits of brokerage files. During an inspection, we verify the licensing status for the brokerage and any additional branch licenses. We also verify all salespersons who are licensed under the broker's license. The broker and salesperson agreements within the brokerage are reviewed for compliance. We inspect the listing agreements, the purchase agreements, and all of the other financial documents for compliance with the requirements set forth in the Yacht and Ship Broker Act. We confirm that all of the advertised vessels match the records that are found within the brokerage files. We also provide real-time education and support and respond to any questions that may arise during an inspection. Next slide, please. The second component of the enforcement section is to investigate consumer complaints. Once a complaint has been verified to fall within the Division of Boating and Waterways jurisdiction, there is a legislative mandate to investigate the complaint. Complaints can range from the dissatisfaction with representation by a broker to allegations of fraud. The Division of Boating and Waterways does not have jurisdiction over any new boat sales or used boat sales that were not brokered. An example of a transaction that would not fall under our authority would be if an individual had a complaint regarding a vessel that was purchased from the vessel owner through a classified ad. For a complaint, we first conduct a preliminary investigation to confirm the jurisdiction. Next, we gather information and evidence from both the complainant and the respondent. We then complete a desk investigation where we review the complaint and all information and documentation that's been received, and we complete additional research as needed. If necessary, interviews are conducted with the complainant and the respondent and any witnesses who may be available. Once the investigation is complete, we identify what, if any, violations of harbors and navigation codes occurred and determine the level of intervention required. I will cover these levels of intervention in just a few moments. Next slide, please. The third component of the enforcement section is monitoring and responding to unlicensed activity. The Division of Boating and Waterways receives tips from licensees and consumers regarding the licensing of brokers and salespeople, as well as potential unlicensed activity. The Yacht and Ship Program also consistently monitors online advertisements for licensing compliance. We conduct investigations into possible unlicensed activity and document any evidence. And if unlicensed activity is found, we make notifications to the appropriate entities. A broker would be notified, for example, if their salespersons are advertising vessels for sale while their license is in a suspended status, or if they are advertising vessels for sale without identifying the brokerage who holds the listing. An out-of-state company or individual is notified if they are advertising California vessels for sale. They are sent a cease and desist notification and the harbors and navigation codes to provide them with education. Any unlicensed individuals are provided with education and information on how to become licensed. We follow up as needed with any individuals or companies who are found to not be in compliance with the Yacht and Ship Brokers Act. Next slide, please. The Division of Boating and Waterways enforces the Yacht and Ship Brokers Act through three main levels of intervention. The level of intervention depends on multiple factors, which may include the type of violation, the seriousness of the violation, if the violation is a repeat offense, or if the involved party's knowledge of the harbors and navigation codes. We educate, which would be the first level of intervention. We educate by providing information while responding to any stakeholder questions or concerns. And we can also use corrective guidance, which can include informative letters, warning letters, or cease and desist notices. We can increase the level of intervention pursuant to Harbor and Navigation Code Section 739 by assessing civil penalties. Civil penalties may be assessed as a result of an inspection or from a complaint investigation. Our strongest level of intervention involves referring a case or a penalty matter to the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office, and which would be heard by an administrative law judge who could decide the matter and order additional discipline or additional penalties. Next slide, please. Between June 1st, 2024 through May 1st, 2025, 8 consumer complaint cases were opened. 5 of those complaint cases have already been resolved, and 3 are still pending. 7 cease and desist orders were issued during the same time period. The Yacht and Ship Program conducted 6 physical inspections and 9 remote audits from June 1st, 2024 through May 1st, 2025. 8 of these inspections and audits resulted in penalty assessments totaling $22,750, of which $7,830 has been collected, with the remaining penalty assessments being due before the end of this fiscal year. 7 additional remote audits are pending completion. Next slide, please. Thank you for allowing me to present on the Yacht and Ship Program's enforcement section. This concludes my presentation. Listed on this slide is all of the contact information for the Yacht and Ship Unit. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you, Emily. At this time, do we have any public comments?
Madam Chair, we do not have any public comment, and I do not see any hands raised.
Perfect. Excellent. Is there anything from the fellow commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Hallahan.
I just want to verify, I'm in the Bay Area. There's so many gazillion boats, and there's a lot of people who want to get tax write-offs on their boats, so they donate them to someone, and then they sell them, and there's a lot of change in those tax laws, and innocent people who don't know about them are trying to buy the boats from the so-called nonprofit, you know, that is getting the boat. But you don't look into any of that type of thing.
If a vessel is being sold in California mm-hmm. and someone is brokering that sale, they are required to hold a license. So a licensee would be needed to broker that sale.
What if they're the head of a nonprofit and they're receiving it as a nonprofit and then they hold on to it and then sell it? I mean, would that be a brokerage situation?
I think we would probably have to take that by a case-by-case basis. If you have a specific incident, we can happily look into that and see where the laws would apply.
That's very interesting. So you keep track of what the tax advantages are and how people try to get around that with their...
That is not within our jurisdiction.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But I'm just saying that's part of the issue, you know. So, yeah, I thank you so much for your presentation.
Yeah, of course. Thank okay. you.
Excellent. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on. And I want to have Mr. Trattner will present our final set of programs. We have the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, known as BIG, Boater Sewage Management Grant Program, which includes the Education and Outreach Grants, Floating Restroom Grants, Sewage Pump Out, and Dump Station Grants.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ethan Trattner, and I'm a Grant Project Manager in the Grants and Loans Unit. Today, I'll be presenting a program update on both the Federal Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, or BIG, and the Sewage Management Grants funded by the Federal Clean Vessel Act, known as CVA. California is one of the top boating states nationally based on the number of registered boaters, and DBW uses these grants to provide for boaters through public and private partnerships, transient boat facilities, floating restrooms, and pump-out units. Next slide, please. I'll be presenting an update on BIG first. The purpose of BIG is to construct, renovate, or maintain visitor tie-up facilities for recreational transient vessels 26 feet or more in length. Transient vessels, as defined in this program, are those that stay 15 days or less. BIG is a federally funded program managed by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service and funded from the Sports Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. DBW is the designated state entity and is responsible for administering this program. Next slide. BIG offers two different grant awards. Tier 1 grants provide up to $300,000 for projects in California, and Tier 2 applications are ranked nationally and provide up to $1.5 million for each project. Last cycle, there was $14 million available nationally for both tiers. Each grantee must meet all eligibility requirements and provide a minimum of 25% match. DBW accepts applications July through August, subject to receiving the federal funding opportunity announcement, and staff select the most competitive applications and submits them to United States Fish and Wildlife Service for their consideration. Federal awards are announced in the spring of the following year. Next slide, please. BIG eligible costs include tie-up facilities, which can include funding for slips, piers, mooring buoys, docks, and gangways. Amenities may include fuel stations, restrooms, utilities, and laundry. Security is lighting, communications, and beacons. Safe harbor features, which can be breakwaters, wave attenuators, and seawalls. Soft costs such as engineering and permitting, and these funds can pay for dredging up to $200,000. Since the program's inception in 2000, California has been awarded over $18 million for 37 infrastructure projects with 27 public and private entities, 18 Tier 1 grants, and 19 Tier 2 grants. Next slide, please. Currently, DBW has three active BIG projects, which are listed here on this slide. Next slide, please. Next, I'll provide an update on the Sewage Management Grant Program, funded in part by the Federal Clean Vessel Act, or CVA. The Sewage Management Grant Program features three sub-programs: education and outreach, floating restrooms, and pump-out and dump station equipment. In 1992, Congress passed the Clean Vessel Act to help reduce sewage discharges from recreational vessels into United States waterways. And like the BIG program, CVA funding comes from the Sports Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund, and DBW serves as the state grant coordinator on behalf of United States Fish and Wildlife Service. Next slide, please. The CVA Education and Outreach Program educates California boaters about why it's so important to pump sewage, don't dump it. DBW typically has two subrecipients providing education and outreach regionally with CVA funding, and this program monitors approximately 146 pumpouts at 111 marinas 2 to 3 times per year. Grantees test the pumpouts, replace small parts, inform marina managers of our grant programs, and prepare annual pumpout performance reports to keep us informed about what's happening in the field with our pump-out network. This program is managed in partnership with DBW's Clean and Green program, and manager Vivian Matuk works with our grantees to provide education and outreach through a multifaceted approach. This includes attending boat shows, boater events, dock walker programs, presentations at marinas and yacht clubs, and the development of informational publication and educational tools. This collaboration allows DBW to give boaters a comprehensive education about minimizing the environmental impacts of enjoying our waterways. This collaboration has also led to the development of low-cost but highly effective educational videos and podcasts that can be found on our website, as well as various other maps and recreational boating resources available in both English and Spanish. Next slide, please. This year, we have a new CVA education outreach partner for our Northern California region, the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta Conservancy. Established in 2009, their mission is to work collaboratively and in coordination with local communities and lead the efforts to protect, enhance, and restore the Delta's economy, agriculture, working landscapes, and the environment for the benefit of the Delta region. We look forward to this new partnership and the expertise that they'll bring to our program. Next slide, please. There is no single source of data that provides the number or location of boats with heads in California, and because DBW does not regulate pumpouts, water quality, or pumpout availability, we rely on our media campaigns, individual outreach, and our grantees to promote grants to assist marinas with the purchase, installation, operation, and maintenance of pump-out facilities. Marinas with active grant agreements maintain facilities for up to 7 years, and DBW encourages all marinas, whether or not they have DBW-funded facilities or not, to be part of the monitored pump-out network and continue to maintain facilities beyond the grant performance period. One of the primary tools that DBW promotes all sewage management facilities is the Pump-Out Nav app. Originally created in 2017 by DBW and the San Francisco Estuary Partnership, this app allows boaters in California to find operational pump-out stations, dump stations and floating restrooms, flag non-working units, and access an array of outreach and educational materials. The app is available for download in both Google Play and the App Store, and you can find it in our Boat California app under Clean and Green. To date, there's been over 30,500 downloads of the app, and it's being used in other states and provinces, including Oregon, Washington, Vermont, Quebec, Rhode Island, and Florida. The app directs boaters to both CVA-funded and other pumpouts outside of our network, and DBW continues to work with app developers and the public to improve the system and add features. Next slide, please. Since 1979, DBW has deployed approximately 284 floating restrooms to 40 lakes and reservoirs throughout the state. It's estimated that 1 million gallons of sewage are prevented from entering waterways each year due to the availability of these floating restrooms. Floating restroom grants are available to government entities that operate lakes and reservoirs. Applications for the floating restrooms were accepted through our online grant application system last November. We received 5 applications for 9 restrooms, and awards are projected to be announced this summer. All new floating restrooms being constructed and deployed are compliant for ADA accessibility, and the ADA-compliant floating restroom is shown here on this slide. These were designed by California State Parks, and Washington and Oregon will be utilizing these designs for some of their future floating restroom projects. Next slide, please. This slide shows the locations floating restrooms are deployed in California. And you could find floating restrooms on the Pump Out Nav app as well. Next slide, please. This slide shows lakes selected from last year's application cycle. DBW has executed an agreement with Topper Industries to manufacture and deploy 8 floating restrooms to inland lakes. We expect these restrooms to be deployed by late 2025. For decades, DBW had been operating with prior year federal awards, and in 2023, we decided to align our federal funding with state funding so that the funds could be used faster, and we combined 2 federal awards, CVA Inland 2022 and 2023, totaling $1,392,000 to provide these restrooms. DBW also awarded 2 floating restroom operation and maintenance grants to the Jackson Valley Irrigation District for Lake Amador, and for California State Parks at Silverwood Lake. For this year's cycle, or the next federal award is pending, but if approved, there will be $900,000 for floating restroom procurement, and these federal funds provide vital resources to our inland lakes and reservoirs. Grantees are required to operate and maintain the restrooms for 10 years. Next slide, please. Pump out and dump station equipment grants are available to both public and private marinas that are open to the public and serve recreational boaters. Grants are available to purchase and install equipment and for equipment operation and maintenance. DBW accepts applications for these grants on a continuous basis through our online application system, and this year there is $238,000 for equipment and $36,000 for operation and maintenance. The Pump Out and Dump Station Equipment Grant helps fund 75% of the construction, renovation, or operation and maintenance of pump out and dump stations. Currently, there are 146 pump outs and 13 dump stations in our network monitored by our education grantees, and facilities may not charge more than $5 for the use of a CVA-funded pump out or dump station, and they have to be open to the general public. Next slide, please. The list on this slide shows current sewage management projects. Next slide, please. And the list on this slide shows recently completed pump out projects. Next slide. Are there any questions about the BIG program or the sewage management grant program?
Ethan, thank you for your presentation. We really appreciate it and all the hard work you're doing. Want to open up, do we have any public comments at this time?
Madam Chair, we do not have any public comments. I do have one hand raised for Commissioner Peer.
Okay. You have a hand raised for, oh, virtually. Yeah.
Yes, virtually for
okay.
Commissioner Peer.
Yeah. Is there any comments from my commissioners that are in person right now? No? Okay. Commissioner Peer?
Well, thank you for your presentation. My question really is really kind of focused. You sort of move pretty fast through some of what I would consider to be some pretty big infrastructure projects, such as dredging and in particular Treasure Island. And I understand because I had my boat at Treasure Island for many years. Now I understand that that facility is being run or it's being licensed to a private company, right? And so what I'm curious about is the degree to which Boating and Waterways funds, for people not familiar with the issue, this is an example because I didn't get everything down that you were saying, but there's just sole access that the only thing in that Clipper Cove is that marina, which is now being privately operated and setting their rates and so forth. So I guess my question to you is, to what degree does the BIG program, BIG program, support private for-profit institutions like the Treasure Island Marina? And is there some sort of recoup or, you know, a bill-out mechanism to try to make sure that the division is not subsidizing a private operator?
So generally, the BIG program is open to any facility that's both public or private to apply for. Specifically in the context of Treasure Island, we're only funding just the transient dock. And this program targets just the users that are non-trailerable traveling from one marina to the next. So that portion of the project is open to the general public, so therefore eligible for this funding. We select based on a number of different criteria, but primarily we looking out for the users themselves, whether or not we think that the area is one that's a good one for California boaters and that there's demand for it. The rest of the marina is not part of the program, so they're able to run it as they are. Any other questions?
We had this conversation several years ago, or at least I had it with Karen Gill. And I understand those transient docks are actually pretty expensive. They're like $30-$35 a night, right? And so the question is, if we're building out the transient docks, we being the state, you know, where does that revenue that they're collecting for transient boaters, where is that going? Is that coming back to us in some shape or form?
They collect fees for their operation and maintenance. It's going to them. And the stipulations for the grant program are that the fees cannot go be above and beyond what's generally allowable in their region. So the various regions in California can help dictate what the price is, like generally. They're going to have to be within the bays as a whole what's charged for overnight stays at marinas. As long as they're consistent with it, they're within the program guidelines.
So they have to do all the maintenance. They, being the private operator, has to do all the maintenance, right? And all of that maintenance comes out of their pocket, and the operation expenses comes out of the private marina's operating budget. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's good.
They don't double dip. They don't come back and just say, oh, now these things are all falling apart and we didn't maintain them and now we need new docks and everything like that. Is that my understanding, or is that what you're presenting
yes.
to us?
They're required to maintain them for 20 years if they accept the award. And these are completely funded from the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. They're federally funded projects, with them providing at a minimum of 25% match. With the context of Treasure Island, they're providing more than that. And that was just what they had applied for. So they're invested in the project beyond what United States Fish and Wildlife is providing them as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ethan.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. At this time, I'm sorry, do you have a comment card?
Madam Chair, there is an attendee virtually online that has her hand up.
Okay.
The person online with the last three numbers of 321, I will now unmute you and allow you to talk. If you could unmute your phone.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. Go ahead and speak. Hello, go ahead
and speak.
Great,
thank you. I'm a boat captain and I'm concerned about my name is Kate Thompson, and I'm also would like to comment on another topic later in the meeting, but I was wondering if the person last presented could speak to working with nonprofit groups like Surf Rider on terms of like the Blue Water Project and actually checking sanitation levels. What's happening with that?
We're not working directly with that project. We work with nonprofits for our education and outreach grants. We do at times fund studies and other proposals, and we'd be interested to discuss future projects with any other groups.
Okay, great. I was just seeing if you're already working with Surf Rider, who's particularly concerned about sanitation levels in public water ways for surfers and, you know, boaters like stand-up paddles. They're actually, you know, directly in contact with the water. Thank you so much for answering my question.
Thank you.
All right. If I'm not seeing any other comments, all right. Thank you, Ethan.
Thank you.
All right. I was going to transition to the administrative items. Does that sound appropriate then? Okay. Excellent. All right. At this time, I'm going to ask council to briefly explain the voting process as we have for the leadership positions.
I wanted to ask, when was it appropriate for me to ask for an additional ad hoc group? Is it now or later? I couldn't figure out how to print it out, so I'm just going to read it. Chair Hawkins, during the ongoing work with the ad hoc committee on the initial analysis economic impact, which Commissioner Tom Pierre and I have been working on since November 2024, we've encountered some challenges that I believe warrant additional focused attention. Specifically, we had difficulties locating accurate, up-to-date information data on boating slips, moorings, and amenities across the state of California. These gaps of data limit our ability to fully understand the economic value and access issues of the state boating infrastructure. For this reason, I'd like to respect the creation of a new ad hoc committee titled Initial Analysis of Boating Slips, Moorings, and Boating Amenities in California. This committee would focus exclusively on identifying and analyzing the current inventory of public and private boating assets statewide. I would be honored to serve this new committee, and I invite Commissioner Istadar to serve alongside me. the findings would support our existing economic impact work and help guide future planning and policy decisions. Pending your approval, I propose that we establish this committee today and target completion date November 6, 2024 on our meeting in the fall.
I assume that's November 2025.
Yeah, I meant to say it's 2025.
Okay. And then in an ad hoc committee meeting as individuals, constituents, not necessarily on your personal time, correct?
We would do this on our personal time. There would be no cost to the state.
Okay. And your fellow commissioners in support of this?
I am in support and agreement.
Okay. Excellent. I'm okay with this, and we can put it your findings on the November agenda down the road, depending on how far we go. So staff has that on record. We'll have this as a discussion item in November, correct? Okay, excellent. Thank you for bringing that forward. Okay, now I think we'll go for the administrative items, and I'd like to ask council to briefly explain the voting process.
I'd be happy to do that. So in the elections that we have here for the commission, generally we have a nominating committee that develops a slate of officers, and they bring those forward. However, we also allow for nominations from the floor, so I think Chair Hawkins will discuss the slate and then ask for nominations from the floor. If there are nominations from the floor, then we will go to a closed ballot. Otherwise, if no one is nominated from the floor, then we will just vote as we usually do.
Excellent. Okay, before we begin, is there any questions?
Well, I have a point of order. Is the so-called nomination committee, to which I understand you are the sole member, is that an ad hoc committee or is that a standing committee?
It's an ad hoc committee.
It's ad hoc. So then just as a point of information, the ad hoc committee was created by the chair according to item, 12A. And at that point, once the chair established the commission, she established herself as the sole member of the commission. Is my understanding of that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. So, and then secondly, and I would imagine, I don't know, but we'll see as we move forward, are members of the commission able to vote for themselves if so nominated?
Certainly.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, and is there any other comments before we move forward? Okay, so for the SLE, I'm putting forth Commissioner Gonzalez as the chair, and as for vice chair, looking at Commissioner Hellahan, and that is my recommendations for leadership. And at this time, is there any nominations from the floor? Commissioner Hellahan?
I nominate Commissioner Peer as chair and Commissioner Gonzalez as vice chair.
So that means there is a contested election, and we will do the chair first, and then we will vote for the vice chair. So,
okay. And then the council. So my understanding, because I received a text, is that I need to submit that via, I guess this is a text message, right?
Correct.
And that'll suffice?
Yeah, that's the way we worked out to do it. It's a little awkward. This is the first time we've had a where everybody hasn't been in person for an election. So that works the way we worked it out.
All right, so I'll send this in now.
Great, thanks.
So do we have a call for a vote, or are we there?
No, she's passing out the ballots now. So you're only voting for chair, even though it says two offices on there, but you're only voting for chair first.
Okay.
Yes, have both the commissioners sent their ballots or their text to Corinna?
I have sent. I responded to a text.
Great.
So hopefully that has been received.
Commissioner Gonzalez. Okay.
Yeah, I do not have a text at the moment.
Oops.
And we'll just wait briefly.
Take a break or whatever you'd like to do. Or you can just sit there for a couple minutes while Corinna counts the votes.
How about this? We will just wait because I don't want everyone to transition until this finalizes. And so we'll just wait. And Corinna, Jose, she'll contact you with the text number.
Did you check her text?
Commissioner Gonzalez, she did send, if you can recheck, she resent you a text.
Yeah, I'm still checking, and I do not see anyone.
Okay, we need to check his number.
Yeah, there might be a typo in the number. Okay, confirming the text made it through, and I'll be responding.
Thank you. The votes are in favor of Commissioner Peer as chair. So if you want to do the vice chair.
Yep, we'll go ahead and move forward with vice chair. Currently on the floor, we have Commissioner Hallahan and Commissioner Jose Gonzalez as vice chair.
So the nomination is for Commissioner Gonzalez as vice chair.
Okay, excellent. Well, congratulations to the new leadership, and I think we look forward to working with everyone as we move forward. So thank you. Okay. So moving on to the next items on the administrative items, we just want to follow up that our Q3 meeting will be August 6th and through 7th, 2025, in Humboldt County. We have our Q4 meeting will be November 5th through 6th in San Diego County. And then we're moving on to the moving on. Are there any suggested items for the next meeting to be held in August? Okay. If not, do you have something?
Yeah. I was wondering if we could focus in next August on how our loan program works and how we audit the loan program, make sure everybody does what they say they're going to do with the money, and make sure we're not loaning too much money to organizations that actually can't pay it back or have hardships.
So currently our loan program is on suspended because of the fund. So are you... Can you give me a little bit more?
Yep. How do we, detail? Now that it's suspended, do we audit the process of, you know, monies that we've already guaranteed?
So that is what we plan to do once we are able to resume the program. So I, we are not there quite yet,
So do we have money out right now that needs to be, things need to be completed, or?
We do. We do.
And is anyone able to audit that and look at that? And could we get a report on that?
We can give you a report on that, yes.
I'm just interested. Okay. It's a lot of money, and we people are going to be having a lot of hard times out there making payments, communities, and things like that. So yeah, I'd be interested. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, having completed the agenda, unless I hear any objection, this meeting is officially adjourned.